Chicago jazz legend Ramsey Lewis, actor, writer, and filmmaker Mike Birbiglia, and live coverage of the Democratic National Convention. And now, here's your host, a man who, from here on out, is only going to speak through an interpreter, Justin Kaufman.
Well, I just woke up. I must took a nap. I must have forgotten we were doing a show. Come on. Welcome to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Very excited to be alongside with you tonight. The Democratic National Convention hits day two. We'll have coverage tonight starting around 10 o'clock. You know, one thing that we decided early on is that we weren't going to go wall to wall. Because I think that at the end of the day, a political convention, whether it be Republican or Democrat, is mostly there to promote the candidate in question. And the candidate in question for the Democrats, of course, you can't say presumptive anymore. She is the nominee, presidential nominee, Hillary Clinton. But last week we did Ted Cruz's speech, we did Mike Pence's speech, and we did Donald Trump's speech. So this week we're going to stick to the same fair and balanced approach. We did Bernie Sanders last night. We will do Tim Kaine's speech tomorrow night, and we will do Hillary Clinton's speech on Thursday. Tonight, former President Bill Clinton is going to speak, and we will have reaction to that speech, just like we did with Chris Christie or Rudy Giuliani or Scott Baio or Anthony Sabato Jr.'s speech last week. I was tempted because, you know, tonight is Alicia Keys, and everybody wants, they want to hear Alicia Keys. Who doesn't want to hear a speech by Alicia Keys? Oh, she's not playing. She didn't bring her piano. Oh, she's just speaking. Oh, well, okay. All right, let's see what else is on. A rerun of Bob's Burgers, maybe. That's coming up tonight. Great show, though, today. Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantes being on the air for the roll call. How fun was that? That's it's so great in the way that the sound pumps in, that you can hear kind of history in the making, but also that flavor. It's so textured, that sound of a convention floor. Really love it. It's better than TV, I think. A TV is, it's obviously they size them up and then the people say, hey, here's the thing. But radio, you just get this real sort of circus environment around it. The boos, you don't know if it's a boo or if it's just someone going, ah. It's really fun to listen to. And I'm glad to be able to hear that live from Philadelphia on the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantes again tomorrow and Thursday. Tonight we have a excellent show. I'm so excited for tonight's show. If you're going to put together the show we did to sort of counter program against the convention, tonight is the night. Coming up here right after the news at 7:30, we're going to talk with Mike Birbiglia. Mike Birbiglia, writer, actor, director, filmmaker. His movie Don't Think Twice, it's getting great reviews. It's coming out this week. It's going to be at the Music Box this weekend. It's a movie. Mike Birbiglia has been a great comedian on the circuit, and he continues to get bigger, and now he's moving into independent film. It's a great movie about a fictional improv group that grows old, and what happens to them when they get to that point about what's next. Do they move on and try to get on the Saturday Night Live? Do they quit? Do they go in different directions with their art? It's really an interesting movie about not just comedy or trying to make your dreams come true, but what happens when they don't come true. And that's what we're going to talk with Mike Birbiglia coming up after the 7:30 news. Also tonight, my guest at the big table, so excited about this. How great is it to live in the city, be able to do a radio show when someone lives in the city's name is Ramsey Lewis? Ramsey Lewis, the great jazz legend here in Chicago, 60-plus years in the business, 75 to 80 albums under his name, his credit. We'll talk with him about his illustrious career here in Chicago. Also, got to ask him about WNUA, right? He was the morning DJ for the smooth jazz. So we'll talk to him at some point about that, of course. You have to. If you're going to talk about Ramsey Lewis, you got to talk WNUA. So we'll talk with Ramsey Lewis coming up at 8 o'clock. So excited for that. Ramsey Lewis, in crowd, sun goddess. So many great, great musical performances for MC Lewis. Also, we'll play The Worst tonight. Very excited about that. This is where we complain about the worst things in our society for prizes. We got great prizes tonight. What do we got? We got a pair of tickets to see Tom. We got a pair of tickets to see Tom Jones. So let me get this straight. You text in that you know what's the worst? Someone's taillight being out and not sure they're going to turn. And boom, you're going to see Tom Jones. That's pretty much the idea. We judge. 312-981-7200. But how great is that? Oh, my gosh. We got some great stuff. Oh, my. We got a 4-pack of passes to the Air Venture Oshkosh show, the air show in Oshkosh. It's like a famed air show. It's like been around for hundreds of years, 75 years, something like 50 years. It's 5 years old. Ah, there you go. Those are prizes, right? That's what you want to do. You want to have a show where you want people to interact, and if they do so in a manner that you find fitting, you go, you know what I want to give you? I want to give you a couple tickets to Tom Jones. Think he can handle that? I don't think he can handle that. And like I said, coming up at 10 o'clock, we will talk about the Democratic National Convention. Huge day today. I'm loving it. And did you see that? And what I don't understand, and you try to consume as much media as you possibly can throughout the day. What I don't understand is the idea that the roll call ended. Hillary Clinton was chosen to be the winner. And Bernie Sanders supporters, delegates, left. They walked out. They protested out in front as if they didn't think that was going to be the outcome, right? I don't know if they're not, maybe they're just not watching news. Maybe they haven't figured out how to do the news on the Snapchat yet, but the idea that they would just walk away almost in like a protest to something that was inevitable seems like a head scratcher to me.
I saw somebody posting on Facebook last night that they were talking to a Bernie supporter at the convention, and the supporter was complaining that it was an insult that Bernie Sanders had to speak last night.
No, come on. There's a lot. I mean, this is unfortunately part of the Democratic National Convention business to interview every Tom, Dick, and Harry who's got a Bernie Sanders button on his lapel. And you get answers like that. And I do think that there has been a dumbing down because there has been protest. But you know what? Democratic National Conventions, particularly Democratic National Conventions, have always been like this. It is only, I mean, yes, we had a unified Barack Obama in 2008. There was no real challenger. Hillary Clinton stepped down away from it. But most of the times you get to this point, this happens. So the idea that Bernie Sanders supporters are in the wrong for voicing their support for a candidate that they believe in, a candidate that that a whole generation believes in that could change the political system, I don't have a problem with that. I think that it's actually quite right. And I also feel, and I know that maybe I'm going out on the limb here, but I also feel that I don't think that the sort of public stoning that they've been getting saying, you know, they're not sure they're going to vote for Hillary Clinton is absolute. Meaning so many Hillary Clinton supporters are like, you're going to ruin this country by not voting for Hillary. Well, what has Hillary done for Bernie Sanders supporters? I mean, they talk about a platform being changed to progressive issues. I'm not sure I believe that. And, you know, there's internet tricks you on every case on that. Yes, it's the most progressive in history. Oh, it's not. It's the 12th most. You're like, how could it be the 12th most? And then at the same side, you talk about, you know, an email hack provides some sort of proof that the powers that be did not, maybe couldn't manipulate the end, but did everything they possibly could to keep that candidate down. So I can understand that frustration. I think this is the proper venue and platform to do so. Maybe not in October, maybe not on election day, but if you're going to have one place where you're going to be able to discuss issues with people with like-minded support, that's it. So I think, yes, at a certain point, definitely, you know, they're going to have to come around. But I don't fault Bernie Sanders supporters for having any sort of protest in their blood right now. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I think by the end of the convention, all right, let's wrap it up. But I think right now is a good time. So that's my thought on it. It'll probably be I should have come up with a new slogan. And that's the last thought. Right? Something like that, Pete? What do you think? That's my thought, and it's the last. You know, very talk show host.
Yeah, I got to just keep on doing it.
Yeah, every time I'm done with a thought, I should say that. That's my thought, and it's the last thought. Last thought.
Yeah.
Well, maybe put a graphic together that we can put together.
Yeah. Lasers.
Yeah. And we could do a last thought every show, like around 11, like 10:45. Here's my last thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Oh, that's good. We should do a last thought. All right. I can feel the thoughts percolating. Last thought.
Yeah, you have to do it. Get them together. Yeah. Get one last thought.
Last thought. This would be like 41-year-old Andy Rooney. Here's my last thought.
60 Minutes is probably dying for a younger Andy Rooney.
Yeah. Younger Andy Rooney. Maybe that could be a character we do. Younger Andy Rooney with last thought. Come on, man.
Yeah. We can tape a bunch in the office. See, your office kind of looks like it has a bunch of
does,
books
yeah.
all laying around.
A lot of disheveled papers on the desk.
Yeah.
All right. I think we're on it. I love it. I love when we can create on air. You know, we can get the brainstorm. Mm-hmm. Last thought. Younger Andy Rooney's got the last thought coming up next. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon tonight. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. Actually, they are, what are we in? I'm looking at the little TV. 2-0, two outs. One little guy's pitching to another little guy. That's my favorite joke here. WGN studio has very small TVs up on the...
Bob, we've got action in the bottom of the fourth inning
where
the White Sox are clinging to a 1-0 lead. Back to you.
There it is. And I'll give you play-by-play from the little TV. One guy's running. I think the ball was hitting that direction. One team's got white, one team's got blue. That's pretty much all I can give you. All right, let's do the carryout tonight. Of course, this is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper, so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. It's official. Hillary Clinton is the nominee for the Democratic Party for the office of President of the United States of America. Not much drama. This is how it was supposed to go, where Clinton and her challenger, I already forgot his name, both collected votes based on their performance during the primaries. But now it's with more handmade ironic signs and straw hats, goofy jewelry, oversized sunglasses, and a couple of colorful turtlenecks. Standard convention fare. And every other state claiming Hillary Clinton as their own. Which just means she's done a great job being a lifer politician. The state of Illinois gave the duty of delivering their Clinton delegates to Betsy Ebeling, Clinton's friend from Park Ridge. She said, "This one's for you, Hill." And then off mic, "Why don't you email me anymore?" But the big news for Illinois had to do with the Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle sitting next to former President Bill Clinton in the old skybox last night. Was that a sign that the political tides are turning? Rahm out and Tony in? Pretty interesting. I think Preckwinkle knew, though, because she chose her blue suit, not her other blue suit. Two blue suits. Mayor Emanuel is heading to Philly tomorrow to throw a snazzy party. Chicago Magazine said it's going to be the hippest party at the DNC, but something tells me it'll be more like Rick Moranis' party in Ghostbusters. "Oh, how you doing, everybody? It's Rahm. Yeah, we're going to play Parcheesi, put your coats in the closet. Oh, who brought the dog? No, it's Bernie Sanders. Come on in, Bernie." A weak second quarter report and a poor third quarter forecast has investors souring on Twitter. The social media giant is hoping to jumpstart revenue by just letting Donald Trump take over. Just tweet more and more and more than the 140 character limit. He's the only thing keeping Twitter alive. Give him more. He needs it. It's like fuel. The Chicago Police Union has floated the idea of having officers not work overtime on the Labor Day weekend. This to prove a point about staffing and, well, labor. When asked for comment, criminals were like, "You know what? I agree. Cops deserve a weekend at home like the rest of us. Am I right?" Then they collectively broke into your car and stole your CD player. Justin Timberlake, that old star, was slapped by a stranger at a celebrity golf tournament yesterday. The intoxicated man just said he wanted to touch the star of NSYNC. Who doesn't? But my guess, it was really for suit and tie. It's a stupid song. A new study says that cockroach milk could actually be good for you. A good source of protein for if, well, when, we run out of food. For those just hearing this, interesting. For all of my friends who have disowned me, I told you so. I told you. In weather, strong late July day, huh? Thinking about doing the rest of the show with no shirt. Gross. In sports, the Sox beat the Cubs to take game one. And they're back at it tonight at the Cell. The Cubs will be joined by newly acquired closer Aroldis Chapman. Chapman addressed the media today through his interpreter, and he had his first questionable moment. When asked about his call with the Cubs front office, the one that Theo said assured them that Aroldis was a man of good character, he said he couldn't remember because he just woke up from a nap. Sure. Good start. I guess all that's left is to throw strikes. Yay. In Olympic basketball news, Jimmy Butler rolled his ankle. He should be okay, but I say, you know what? Shut him down. Send him home. Give him an honorary medal. He avoids Zika and he'll be ready for opening day. Let's turn to football. Did you know that this year will mark the 10th anniversary of the 2006-2007 Chicago Bears Super Bowl team? And at quick glance, and I could be missing a few backup players, but at quick glance, there are zero Bears still playing in the NFL. The last standing, Devin Hester, was released by the Falcons this morning. Now, hear me out. I believe that Devin Hester should keep playing, and I think he should do it on the Bears. The Bears have zero return game. Mariani much? No. And Hester, even at an old age, could cause chills for fans. Imagine that newly formed Bear D pinning back the Packers, forcing a punt from their own end zone, 3 minutes to play. Who do you want back there? Who do you want more than number 23? But let's say that doesn't happen, and Devin Hester, he retires. And I say that Devin Hester should be in the NFL Hall of Fame. He holds the record for most return touchdowns with 20, and more than that, he did things that no other player at that position has ever done. And I know he's not a quarterback or a linebacker, but he was an impact player. He changed the game. He was that good. Remember when there used to be punts and you would go to the kitchen or worse, the bathroom? Not with Devin Hester. And there are instances where punters and kickers have made the Hall, so don't give me that he only played special teams garbage. Hester should not only make the Hall, but I say take 23 off the books. I don't want to see a backup corner missing a tackle with that sacred number on his back. Devin Hester was the best to have ever returned kicks. And as a fan of the NFL, I hope somebody, except the Packers, somebody gives him one more season to marvel. And finally tonight, the adult entertainment site Pornhub allegedly paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to a hacker group to find security flaws. It turns out that member data was exposed. And member info, too. That's the carryout for July 26, 2016. Hey, we're trying out the new color of napkins. What do you guys think of brown? Brown? I like it. Take 20. Coming up after the break, we are going to hear from Mike Birbiglia. His new movie, Don't Think Twice, opens in theaters this weekend, Music Box, other places. We'll talk with Mike Birbiglia about his movie and much, much more coming up here on The Download on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Yeah, 319 just texted in and said, you know, I think I figured out my worst for tonight. Last thoughts. They don't like the new idea for the segment. Young Andy Rooney. Darn it. Thought we had a winner. But 319, they're the judge, you know. Whatever 319 says, we have to listen to. So no more last thoughts with young Andy Rooney. That's been killed. It's been shelved already, Rob.
Well, it's a powerful area code.
It is. You know, it's where all the players are at. It's clout.
Anytime something comes out of the 319,
you got to listen. You got to listen. It's like E.F. Hutton. You know, you got to gotta listen. All right. Are you excited about tonight, Rob?
Oh,
you
man,
excited
are you
about
kidding
the convention?
Me? I'm all over this one. Like
I know.
A cheap suit. Like a cheap pantsuit. I am all over this convention. Double knits.
Double knits. Possibly blue or blue.
Can't wait.
One of the two.
Yeah, I think she's going to go earth tone.
And she might go blue. She might
I
go
think
blue.
She's going to go earth tone on Thursday night.
We'll see, right? It'll be interesting.
I of all people, in my polyester Hawaiian shirt tonight, should not be doling out any fashion advice.
If you do want to see Rob's very, very nice looking shirt, check him out at WGNradio.com.
It is comfortable.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. The 10 o'clock hour, we'll have reaction analysis from Philadelphia and the Democratic National Convention Day 2. Coming up at 9 o'clock, we'll do a special hour of the worst, complaining about the worst things in our society for prizes. Tom Jones tickets. Coming up at 8 o'clock, Ramsey Lewis is my guest at the big table. Chicago Jazz legend. So much to do tonight, but it starts right now with Mike Birbiglia. Mike Birbiglia is the filmmaker, the writer, the actor, the director of the new movie Don't Think Twice. Mike Birbiglia is a great stand-up comedian, and he has done two movies now, Sleepwalk With Me in 2012 and now Don't Think Twice, which opens this week. It's getting great reviews. It really takes on this idea of an improv group in New York City, and they're aging out. And what happens to them? It's fictional. It stars Keegan-Michael Key and Gillian Jacobs and others, Tammy Sager's in from Chicago. But it really talks about, or not talks about, it's a movie about what it takes to make it and what happens when you don't. Mike Birbiglia just came through town last week. He did one of the press junkets where he's pretty much doing it for TV. And they set up shop at IO Chicago up on Kingsbury, Sharna's place. And I was able to sneak in and talk to him, which is great, and able to talk to him about the movie, about his life, about stand-up, and about the tone and the things that he's talking about in this movie. We started the conversation. I asked Mike about Chicago improv because it plays a big role in the movie. There's a lot of talk about Chicago improv and legend and his experiences with Chicago improv.
When I was a freshman in college, I was cast in the improv group at Georgetown University, and I became completely immersed in it, and actually that year, Sharna Halpern and this group called Frank Booth from I.O. came and did workshops with us, performed with us, and it really imprinted on my brain. Like, it was like that moment in your life where you're so impressionable, and like I was just like, this is my life, and Sharna signed my book and said, I look forward to working with you in Chicago, you know, and it's like, and then when it came time to, when I graduated, and I was going to go to Chicago or New York, and my sister had just moved from Chicago to New York, and so I slept on her couch. I feel like if she hadn't moved, I would have slept on her couch here.
Being in stand-up and comedy, what did you know about the Chicago improv scene? Because it does play a role. I mean, it's referenced a lot of Del Close stuff in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
What did you know about the Chicago improv scene doing comedy in New York?
Well, I'm obsessed with the culture of it. So, like, I've read all the books, and Liz Allen's Jimmy Corrine's book, Improvising Better, is one of my favorites. The Something Wonderful Right Away is one of my favorites. It's in the movie. Sharna Halpern's Truth in Comedy, and Sharna and Dell's Truth in Comedy. TJ Dave's book, I think, is phenomenal. I do improv at UCB in New York, and I have off and on for the last, you know, 16 years. So it's almost like this, we're reluctant to call it a hobby, but it's like something I love to do. But it's not something I make my living at doing.
A lot of the movie, you know, surrounds this ensemble, and it's and there really is a lot about the cult of ensemble.
Sure.
You know, and obviously with the whole plot of the movie surrounds how tight and the relationships of the people that are in the ensemble.
Yeah.
It's different than other genres, other disciplines. When you talk about bands or you talk about painters or whatever, there's something special about an improv ensemble.
I think so, yeah. And I part of the impetus of the making the film was that my wife made this observation when she came to one of my improv shows one night in New York, where I think on stage that night it was Chris Gethard and Tammy Sager who were in the film, and then I think it was like A.D. Bryant and Ellie Kemper and a bunch of other people. And my wife said, it's so interesting that everyone's sort of equally talented, but that person's a movie star, that person's on SNL, and that person lives on an air mattress in Queens. And I just thought, not only is that a great observation, but it's a movie. I just pictured the sort of Big Chill comedy set in the world of an improv theater. And that's sort of where the seed of it came from. And what's interesting, you say the thing about the nature of group work and the cult of it and everything. It's like, I wrote down this phrase around that time. I put it on my wall. I wrote, art is socialism, but life is capitalism. And I just thought, that's a funny thing to write about, because I think it's almost like this musical chairs is you're watching in the movie. It's like a live action musical chairs.
It's so interesting, because doing a movie about improv comedy or doing an improv ensemble, it's really about the characters more than about improv, and improv plays a big role.
Sure.
Did you have to, as a director and as a writer, did you have to resist the urge to kind of go for the joke? I mean, almost like, if you think about the aesthetic of improv is the same concept.
It's a long form.
Yeah, it's a long form where not everything, something just because it's based in comedy, has to be funny.
Something that has a long form structure and narrative, and isn't just joke, and everything has sort of a payoff. Yeah, a lot of that's in the edit, to be honest with you.
Really?
I mean,
in
the scenes, you know, we always try to act the truth of the scene, and we play the reality of it, and therein lies sadness and also comedy. That's where you have that. And then there's a second calibration that takes place in the edit where you'd have edits of scenes where, like the Ben Stiller scene, for example, we had versions of that that were 4 or 5 minutes long, all jokes, hilarious. And it was like people would laugh so hard, but then it was like, well, it's not quite realistic, which, it, you know, so it almost felt like another movie. And so yeah, we had to sort of pull that back.
That's a great way to put it, because it does, I mean, there is realism in this movie that, you know, as anyone who knows improv and knows or has been involved in the improv community, it's spot on when you talk about the relationship with the other people in the ensemble, the jealousy and the envy that's posed when people have success, and then the introspection about when it's time to, I guess you don't hang up.
Yeah, let go.
Yeah, those things are really tossed around in your movie, and that's what kind of makes it, in my opinion, a successful story.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I really wanted to. I thought no one's making a movie about how life isn't fair. And I feel like we're constantly inundated with this American dream concept that, like, everyone's going to make it, and you can too, or whatever. I forget what the Stephen Colbert book title is. It's like, I Love America, and You Can
and
Too.
You can't,
yeah, whatever the thing is. But it's... But I do feel like there's this thing where we sometimes overlook in America, which is like we don't all have to get the same thing. You know, it's like I feel like me and my friends in our 20s, we all kind of wanted to get the same dream, write for the same 3 shows or whatever that right. were impossible to get jobs at. And at a certain point, you realize, well, that's not going to happen. We can't all get the same thing. And then the person who does get it maybe isn't so happy after all. And I thought, how come there's not a movie about that? And
right.
the reason is that there's not a lot of money in it.
it doesn't fulfill
the fantasy that Hollywood movies try to fulfill. And that's where independent film comes in. That's where, you know, people listening to this, you know, should know that if you want movies that are nuanced and have shades of gray in them, see this movie at the Music Box, because it's like that's how we'll be able to make more of them.
It really does center around, I mean, the concepts that are kind of true to life. When you talk about failures and successes, there's a great line, and I paraphrase it. You know, without improv, I'm just a loser. You know,
like, right,
I mean,
right.
But there's something about that when it comes to artists and people who have particularly done something in their 20s that they felt was, you know, this is what I am,
yeah.
this is who I am, whether it be a musician, an actor, an improviser. And they get to a certain point, and they're like, I don't know how to live without this art.
Yeah, I mean, that's Chris Gethard's character, Bill, who's, you know, in the day, he's handing out hummus samples at the grocery store, and at night, he's a superstar of improv, you know, and audiences are cheering for him. And yeah, I mean, I struggle. I don't think about this too often, but... Now that you're mentioning it, I struggle with that myself. My day-to-day life is very different from my life on stage. It's completely, you know, I was at the Music Box for a sneak preview, and it's like people cheering and going crazy. You know? And then, you know, the cut to, I'm back at my hotel room and having insomnia till 3:30, and I wake up to talk about the movie. You know, there's a lot of, the majority of my life is unglamorous.
Yeah, I think that you think about improvisers, they get up on stage on a Friday and Saturday night and they kill in front of all these audiences and they have these experiences where people just assume, and it's the same for cast members on TV shows. I mean, you kind of explore that with the kind of SNL kind of thing in the movie, but this concept that everybody, it's almost like social media, everybody just puts they have this idea of everything about them is perfect or glorious or because of their art, but at the end of the day, they go home and sleep on the same pillow.
I hope that trend reverses, you know, the trend of sort of broadcasting ourselves in the grandest, most flowery, fake way, which just makes everybody feel bad. I hope that trend reverses and that, because it's unfortunate. It's just, you know, and I do it too. I mean, I look at people's profiles.
And you just think, oh, they're happy.
Oh, yeah, things are going great over there.
Yeah, right.
And I'm in my hotel room at 3:30 a.m. and my body doesn't know how to sleep.
The great thing about the movie, I mean, is you explore these connections and relationships to these friends that have been doing improv in an ensemble for years. They live together in the same place. Yeah. They do, and at the end of the movie, I mean, and really it's about having to confront feelings of not only growing up, but growing old, moving on, those kind of things. It's really, it could be anything. It doesn't have to be improv.
Of course.
But there really is. I mean, towards the end of the movie, you really get this, like, sense about the loneliness of a lot of the characters. And at the end, there's a scene that where they all kind of go up to the upstate New York, and they have this moment where they don't want to leave each other.
Yeah.
And there really is this idea of loneliness, but this improv ensemble and this group that they've been with forever, it's their family.
Yeah.
And there's something about family in this as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I see the scene that you're referencing, it I get choked up. I can't watch the movie anymore because I start crying, and I'm fine with crying, but I just can't cry every day. I feel like I'm good with once a week, but when it's every day, people just start going, "Mike, what's going on with you?" That scene reminds me of what it was like to say goodbye, you know, to my college friends or my high school friends or my family or, you know, my coworkers on a certain job or whatever it is. It's like there's so many things in life that mirror principles of improv. This idea of, like, you know, this idea of improv is like it happens in a moment and it disappears. It's only meant as an act of love, you know, is one of the quotes in the movie about improv. And I think that's true of most friendships. And it's like a friendship with a group of people is going to, in a certain way, living in a certain place is going to last 4 or 5 years, maybe 10 years, but is it going to last your whole life? Probably not. And I think that's what's relatable about the film. I think that's why people connect to it, because it's just about how everything changes. I mean, that's what the difference between Jack and Sam in the movie is. Jack wants things to change. He wants to move to the next lily pad, and Sam says, you know, why can't we stay on this lily pad?
I like it here.
Yeah.
You know, for you, I mean, obviously this is your second film. You're having a lot of success with the movies, great reviews. People are enjoying the movie that's coming out. It's going to be at the Music Box on the 29th. You know, is this a direction for your career? I mean, is it going to be Mike Birbiglia a filmmaker? I mean, are you going to put some of the other stuff in and keep creating films like this?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think the key thing that I've taken out of the last 8 years of my life is that I think I just want to create things in isolation. I want to create movies and one-person shows and stand-up, and I don't want to audition for Hollywood. Because I don't want to bow to the gatekeepers of a system that I don't quite believe in. And that's not to say that there's not great studio films. I mean, you know, you see the Lego movie, and it's really innovative, and there's Guardians of the Galaxy is great. But then you see so many more movies, I feel like, that are kind of insulting to our intelligence.
Yeah.
And it just bums me out, and I just don't know if I can play that game.
Mike Birbiglia is the writer, director, and star of Don't Think Twice, which will be at the Music Box Theater on July 29th. Yeah. We're here at the I.O. Theater.
With Ira Glass.
With Ira Glass, that's
right. That weekend, Ira Glass is doing like 4 or 5 Q&As.
That's great. Well, I was going to come on too. So, Mike, thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
And congrats
really
on the movie.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to talk with Ramsey Lewis, Chicago great jazz legend. He's my guest tonight at the big table. So excited to talk with Ramsey Lewis. Oh, man. So excited. Can't wait. It's a great little convo with Mike Birbiglia, too. Go see his movie. We are going to talk with Ira Glass. He is the producer and obviously the famed broadcast, Hall of Fame broadcaster for This American Life, which can be heard all around the country, all around the world. I think he's got something like millions. I'll just say millions. Can't remember the specific. But we'll talk to him coming up on Friday because he will be at the Music Box, as Mike said, doing some Q&As. So we'll talk with Ira not only about Don't Think Twice, but about his career. He used to work with Ira, a different life. Good chance to talk to him about some of the some of the blood, sweat, and tears that goes into the work he does, not only in radio, but projects he does with film and television as well. So that's coming up on Friday. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my guest tonight at the big table, I'm a huge fan. First signed in 1955 by Chicago's Chess Records, jazz pianist Ramsey Lewis is considered to be one of the best Chicago jazz musicians to ever tickle the keys. Ramsey Lewis has been producing music since he was a child, and what's always been great about Lewis is his diversity, whether it's straight-ahead classic jazz, electric fusion, smooth jazz, or even classical music. He just excels. This year, the jazz great turned 81 years old, and he's still making music, performing live. To date, 75 to 80 albums under his belt. It's my honor to welcome Ramsey Lewis to the big table. Mr. Lewis, a pleasure.
Wow. Hi. How are you? I like that intro. Why don't you just call me Ramsey?
Ramsey. All right. We'll start there. Okay. 75 to 80 albums.
Yeah. Yeah. But you got to understand, I think I actually recorded about 60. The other 20 or so are, you know, they re-released the combinations.
Oh, right. Yeah. Like greatest hits and stuff like that.
And back when we first started recording, the Chess Brothers, they didn't know, you know, they were into R&B and blues. And they thought you should put out an album every 6 months. And even if you didn't get it out, come in and record every 6 months. And so it wasn't until the Beatles came out, which was sometime in the 60s, that they noticed that the Beatles were not doing albums every 6 months. That's when they told us, the artists, okay, you guys, maybe do one every year. So by the time they told us that, we had already, you know.
You already had 35 albums.
Exactly.
All right, well, let's talk about your career. I mean, I've read so many great stories about you as a child, one of which being that you started at like the age of 4 years old. I mean, that was sort of beginnings of learning how to play and practice, but there really was a movement to teach you piano and music at a very young age.
Well, I mean, picture this. I'm in the floor of our living room, and I'm shooting marbles or whatever, playing with a train. I don't know what I was doing. And I hear my parents tell my older sister, Lucille, she's about 3 years older than me. She passed on, God bless her. So Lucille, my dad, Lucille, you're going to start taking piano lessons next week. Ernestine Bruce, who's our church organist, she gives people piano lessons in the neighborhood. And I'm shooting marbles. What I hear, not so much piano lessons, but she's going to get to go buy a cake, or she's going to get to do something special, or she's going to do, so I'm just, whatever she's doing, I found out it was good to say, I want to do that too. And they said, we can't afford but one. I raised so much sand and so much whatever that they said, okay. And so they let me go with her, and we took lessons together.
Was there ever any cake?
No. We took lessons together for about 6 months, and after the first two or three, four lessons, I said, okay, I don't want to take lessons, because I didn't know you had to practice. See, I thought you go once a week for a half hour, and you learn to play the piano, and that's it.
That's it.
This stuff about go home and practice half hour, 45 minutes every day, unfortunately, the way you say it, the piano teacher said to my parents, Lucille probably has talent in other areas. In fact, we're sure she has talent in other areas, but not at the piano. However, little Ramsey has a lot of talent, and we think you should keep him. That's the worst thing I could have heard. Because my dad would come home And he'd say to my mother, they call me Sonny. Oh, I shouldn't be saying this on the air. Now people are going to call. Did Sonny practice today? And she said, no, he didn't practice today. Oh, my God. So I got in the habit of practicing every day. And I think it was the practicing that really helped me out to this day.
As you got a little bit older, there was this, there really was a push to, for you to play classical music, not necessarily jazz, or at the time you were actually playing gospel. But there was a worry when you started to make a transition to jazz music that you would undo the work that you did, or you would be trained differently, and that, that your parents really wanted you to be a classical pianist.
Well, that's true. One of the other church musicians, Wallace Burton, God rest his soul, had a band. At the time, he was in college, I was in high school. And he heard me play in church, and he heard me play gospel and classical music. So after church one Sunday, he said, hey, Ramsey, you want to play with our band? I'm like, yeah, I want to play with your band. So my mother was like, I don't know, you know, let's ask his piano teacher. And so my father and mother went down to talk to Dorothy Mendelson at Chicago Musical College, and they said, you know, they want him to play jazz. Was that going to mess with his technique to play Bach and Beethoven and Chopin? And she said, no, it won't. She didn't say mess with. She said it won't interfere with his technique. But here's something else she said. This is in the 50s or in the early 60s. She said, Mr. and Mrs. Lewis, to be honest with you, there are not a lot of opportunities for African-American or minority people to earn a living playing classical music. So I suggest that if Ramsey has opportunities in other areas, that he should take them. So, yeah, let him play with this jazz band.
As a musician yourself, and going back to that time, did you want to play that kind of music? Did you want to play jazz and gospel, or were you... Did you have your mind set on being a classical musician?
You know, at that time in my life, it was funny. I was just enjoying life. And I loved to play the piano. And it could have been, I loved to play classical music. So when I got to play with the band, it was wonderful. Funny thing happened, though, that first night with the band, Wallace Burton thought that I could play a lot of jazz songs, which I could not. So he said, okay, Ramsey, it's a seven-piece band. We're going to open with Charlie Parker's Confirmation. I don't know that. Well, then we'll open with Dizzy Gillespie's Groovin' High. I don't know that. Okay, let's play a standard then. We'll open with How High the Moon. I don't know that. So he, after about two, three or more of those songs, he said, just why don't you go sit over on the side? And he had to take me home. I guess the other thing, I'm 15 years old. My parents says, okay, Wallace, you can take him, but you got to bring him home. All the thing was over at 10 o'clock at night. And on my way home, he says, Ramsey, if you want to learn this music called jazz, come over to my house and I'll be glad to teach you. I went over his house and he started teaching me these things about jazz. Had he not said that,
right.
No telling what I would be doing.
That's Ramsey Lewis, my guest tonight, the legendary Chicago jazz musician, just one of the best musicians to come out of the Windy City of all time. Ramsey Lewis, will continue our conversation here at the Big Table. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. It's my pleasure to have Ramsey Lewis at the big table tonight. This is such an honor to have you in the studio. It means a lot to me. I've been listening to your music for a long time. I mean, I think Sun Goddess I ruined that CD. It's scratched up because I played it over and over and over. It's great to have you in studio. Ramsey Lewis, of course, a great Chicago jazz musician.
And this is a big table, by the way.
A very big table.
A very big table.
Well, Ramsey, let's talk about, I guess let's go right to the in crowd. Let's go to the trio. You talked about being 15 years old and being turned on to jazz. At what point did you start to recognize that you not only had something with jazz, but that you were going to be successful at this?
That's the other thing. I never dreamt about success, in quotes. I just wanted to be as good as I could be today and then better than I was yesterday. And one thing just led to another. Doors just opened. Speaking of the in crowd, L.D. Red and L.D. Young, Red Holt and I were playing a gig in Washington, D.C., and we needed to put out our next album, and we needed one more song. Well, at that point, we had found that putting serious jazz songs is fine. Songs by Charlie Parker, songs from the Great American.
That's sort of how you started, that kind of sort of classic, trio stuff.
But we had started two or three albums before this album putting what we called a fun song, something that you could dance to or shake your hips to or whatever. And we couldn't decide what that fun song could be for this album. So the waitress comes over, I'll never forget her name, Nettie Gray. She says, "What are you guys doing?" Because it was in Washington, so we ate at this coffee house every day. We're trying to think of a song to put on the album that's kind of fun and can dance to. She says, "Have you heard Dobie Gray's The In Crowd?" LD and Red had heard of it. I said, "I never heard it." So she says, "Well, let me play it on this," when they had jukeboxes coffee shops. Hello. So she went over to the jukebox, played Dobie Gray's The In Crowd. I said, "Okay, we've got the meat of the album. We got this song from the Great American Songbook. We got this one, la, 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 la. This is our fun song." And we put it on the album. It was a live recording at the Bohemian Caverns in Washington, D.C., and we recorded Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So by the last set Thursday, Red Holt, the drummer, looked over at me and said, we haven't played that new song, The In Crowd." And now this place... Bohemian Caverns is where John Coltrane and the hard boppers played, you understand? And they sit there and they have their hands under their chin and they kind of listen to what you're doing. And they applaud politely. And
it's
nicely.
Not a dance place.
It's not a dance place. Right. So when we started The In Crowd, they were up on their feet. They're beating on the table. Well, you hear on the record, a lot of people thought it was overdubbed. People were just carrying on.
And that was real.
It was real. And the record company said, "Well, let's put that out." They did. And we never looked back.
It's so interesting because you, among others, but I would say that the trio and your work, it was really the crossover moment for jazz music. I mean, there was the jazz, you know, what was happening. It's so many different great artists were able to do straight ahead jazz. But when you were putting out the fun songs, The In Crowd specifically, that's where it almost crossed over to pop music, to radio, where jazz got a little bit more, I guess, it just got a little bit more mainstream.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I'll always remember is The In Crowd was in the top five pop albums. I think the Beatles and Barbara Streisand, and I think we were number five. And I'll never forget that, seeing our name with those kinds of people.
Did you, at the time, thinking back to that, I mean, obviously crossing over like that was a huge accomplishment. How was it perceived by the jazz community to cross over to be a pop sensation?
Interesting. Great question. Now, this is like the 16th album, 15th album, and putting a fun song on the last four. The jazz crowd were like, "We love this group." The jazz critics, "We love this group," with the fun songs on these albums. Mm-hmm. But when it went pop, all of a sudden, the critics and the hard boppers were like, "We don't love this group anymore." It was like, "This is our group. We're part of this whatever. And we don't want you guys at large to know about them or to buy their records."
Right.
And so, as far as we were concerned, we'd rather make more money and play more gigs than to be the darlings of the
jazz world.
Right.
You know, the Ramsey Lewis Trio, I mean, your name was front and center. And at a certain point, and you've talked about this, the idea that there was a lot of friction around, it stopped being fun because there was so much friction about being famous. And some of the other artists were talking, in the trio were talking about, it's always Ramsey Lewis. At a certain point, it stopped being fun for you to be in the trio.
Well, you know, what happened, the name of the seven-piece band, L.D. Young, Red Holt. L.D. was the bass player in the band. Red Holt was the drummer in the band. Wallace Burton was the leader of the band. The band broke up, and we were the rhythm section.
Right.
And for a while, the name of the band was The Clefts. So for a while, we called ourselves The Clefts, and then we said, "We can't be The Clefts because that broke up." Daddy O'Daly heard us playing
Great DJ, yeah.
Lake Meadows Lounge. It's called Stelzer's. Lake Meadows Lounge, those days called Stelzer's. And he used to come in almost once, twice a week. He was a big-time jazz disc jockey in those days. And he says, you fellas, you should make a record. And we said, yeah, that would be great. So what do you call yourself? And we said, well, you know, we don't know. We used to be the Clefs. He says, well, if you make a record, you got to have a name. So he says, why don't you guys go home? When I come in next week, give me three or four or five names. We came back with the Humbugs or the whatever, you know, some really weird names. He said, no, you can't do that. So we sort of shrugged our shoulders. He said, I tell you what, the piano is in the lead most of the time, right? And he's a piano player. So just call it the Ramsey Lewis Trio. Well, we're like, okay. They're like, Eldie and Red are like, okay, why not? Yeah, let's go make this record. And it was that way. It was Love and Kisses until the In Crowd broke out. And when the In Crowd broke out, the wives of the other guys said, why on radio? They're only talking about Ramsey Lewis. Now we're a partnership, and all three guys are getting the same money.
Right. It's not really about money. It's just about your name.
Yeah. I mean, and Huntley Brinkley, Ramsey Lewis Trio, the new group, the blah, 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 blah. I mean, but at the end of the week, if it's $400, everybody gets $150 or whatever. And but the wives got that ego thing going. And from that day, from television and radio, people talking about my name, the guys now, they would start coming backstage. Maybe we can change the name. I said, change the name? I said, well, if you guys want to change the name. So one thing led to another. The group broke up. I mean, it's a shame it broke up, because by then we were making tons of money.
What did you do? I mean, at that point, were you like, well, I'm going to keep being Ramsey Lewis with different players?
Ramsey
or what
Lewis.
Do you do? I mean, what do you do? Take us to that emotional point, because you guys came up together. You talked about being in Wallace's band. When the band breaks up, the Ramsey Lewis Trio, and I know we're going back a ways, but what was the emotional feel? Were you like, I'm going to move on from this? Or was it more like, well, I'm just, that's it?
No. The way my parents brought me up and the talent that I had, I always felt that there was a brighter day ahead, no matter what it was. They formed Young Holt Unlimited, and they had a hit record. And they were hitting it pretty good there for 3 or 4 years, and then they broke up. But I just kept being Ramsey Lewis and putting out records, and people kept saying, we want to buy your record, we want to come see you, and here we sit here today.
Ramsey Lewis, my guest tonight at the big table, talking about his illustrious career, one of the most prolific, legendary musicians to come out of the Chicago area. We'll continue our conversation after the news. Ramsey Lewis here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, Ramsey Lewis, a legendary jazz musician, one of the best to come out of Chicago of all time. We're talking about your career here in Chicago and around the world. One of the things we mentioned right before the news was the breakup of the Ramsey Lewis Trio, and you continued to work. What I've always been impressed by you, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but Sun Goddess is a record in which you really started to explore your creativity, try different things. You went electric with the piano. You almost on purpose tried to shed the old Ramsey Lewis, the sort of, you know, buttoned up in front of the piano, the trio kind of look. What was behind the idea of moving to a more of a fusion, or at the time a jazz fusion kind of feel in the 70s?
Well, just experimenting and having fun with it. And what happened with Sun Goddess, we were in the studio recording an album. And there was one concert in Washington, D.C. that we had to honor. So, of course, you go play this concert, and we'll go back to the studio when we get back. While I'm in Washington, D.C., now, the original trio the original trio had broken up, but the second trio with Maurice White.
Right, of course. Eden, right.
we were the trio, but then that trio broke up because Maurice White went on to form Earth, Wind, and Fire. So now I'm in Washington, D.C. Maurice White has Earth, Wind, and Fire, and they had just played Madison Square Garden. He had to call me. I said, "What's up, Reese?" We call him Reese. He said, "We just opened. They were new on the scene for Sly and the Family Stone, and we just blew them off the stage, Ramsey. Madison Square Garden was packed, and he went told me we played this, and we burned the stage down." Then he said, "Oh, by the way, I got a tune for you." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, and this tune is going to be bigger than the In Crowd or any hit you ever made." I said, "Wow." He says, "What's up?" I said, "Well, I'm in the studio right now, Reese." He said, "Well, why don't me and Verdeen and a couple of other guys, on our way back to L.A., he had moved to L.A., stop in Chicago, and we'll record the tune with you, and then there you go." I said, "Okay." So sure enough, they stopped in Chicago. We went to Paul Serrano's studio. We spent 3 days on this tune. He wanted it just right, just so. And I said, "Okay." I said, "What are you going to name it? Do you have a name?" He says, "It's called Hot Dog It."
Yeah.
I said, "Oh, really?" "Yeah, Hot Dog It." So then we're packing up, and he said, "Ah, I have this other song, and it's only about 12 bars long, and that's it. So to make it long enough, you'll solo. We'll give Donald Meyer, the tenor saxophone player, he'll solo. We'll play the melody again, and then we'll solo out, and we'll fade out." We said, "Oh, but you got the hit, you know. Hot Dog It is the hit." So we said, "Okay." And we did just that. It took us about 3-4 hours to do this other song because we had the hit. It took us 3 days. I said, "So what are you going to name this song?" And he thought for a while. He said, "Call it Sun Goddess. Call it Sun Goddess." And so we put out Hot Dog It. Radio played Hot Dog It for about 2.5 weeks and fell off the charts. But the album was running out of the stores. It was flying out of the stores. So the record companies did some research. People were just going in on their own because album stations, there were in those days, there were stations that played album cuts. Mm-hmm. This cut was 7-8 minutes long. And they found out, well, they're asking for this song called Sun Goddess. So we did a shorter version and put that out.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and so the rest is history.
Well, I mean, again, you've had this great relationship. You've been the spokesperson, but you've also been, you know, a guy who gets disapproval from the jazz community because there wasn't necessarily a lot of fervor for jazz musicians doing fusion or doing what you were doing. I mean, I think of you, Miles Davis was doing it at a certain point, but it seemed like in the 70s and even into the 80s, jazz musicians made a change, and that same jazz crew that didn't really like that sound.
Yeah, but you know what? It's interesting you brought up Miles Davis's name, because you're right. Through the 60s and very early 70s, it was like electric music, synthesizers, too many guitars, this, that, and the other. Until Miles Davis did it with Chick Corea on electric piano and John McLaughlin on,
right,
on electric guitar. Once Miles Davis did it, it was okay. Everything was fine, you know. Whatever you want to do. So it was a wonderful thing.
Just for time, I could go for every album that you've done. We'd go into the decades. One of the things, as we move to more of the issues around jazz music, unfortunately, we've seen over the last decade or so, or maybe even longer, a real drop-off with jazz. It's not as robust. It's not as healthy as it once was, seeing no radio airplay. Even jazz stations are going away. For you, as somebody who spent a lot of time in jazz radio at WNUA here in Chicago and frankly have been an ambassador for jazz music, how do you feel about the idea that this country is moving away from jazz music?
I don't feel good about it because jazz is America's contribution to world culture. You can't say that European classical music at Orchestra Hall and Symphony Hall and Carnegie Hall is our music. No, it's great music, and we should perform it. Ballet. What is America's contribution? Well, you can say country western. Yeah, you can say some pop music, but the influences from Europe there, but substantial music, jazz is our contribution. I think what happened when they took music out of the schools, in the public schools, because a lot of kids that went into R&B and some of them went into jazz, first introduced to music in general in a public school system.
Right.
Not only the history of the music, but what's a chord? What's a note? How do you sing in harmony? And, you know, I went to school in the inner city, Wells High School. We had a boys' course, a girls' course, a mixed course. And out of that, kids would want to sing solo. Out of that, out of orchestra, guys wanted to play solo trumpet. Out of that, so all of a sudden now, where they want to cut the budget, you know, let's face it, a lot of people coming that play jazz came from the black neighborhood, African-American neighborhood. And they were allowed to take the instruments home. Those that stood out, you can take the trumpet home, Johnny, but you got to sign it out. Your parents have to blah,
right,
blah,
of course.
And so once that was cut out of the public school system, there was a big drop, number one. Number two, those that were able to maintain in some order or fashion and progress, radio. Okay, there's two or three stations in Chicago. There are two or three stations in New York. There's at least one station in most major cities. Radio kept jazz alive. And then whatever that was all about, smooth jazz didn't help because although I was a part of it, the people from Madison Avenue saw that that was a way to sell more advertising and maybe straight-ahead jazz was not the way to sell advertising.
They're really not the same thing. I mean, you, of all people, know that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But they put more advertising dollars behind pushing
smooth jazz.
In fact, at WNUA, I had to go into the people and say, you know, this music's okay. It's okay. But you got to let me play Oscar Peterson every now and then. You got to let me play Count Basie every now and then. And for about 3 or 4 weeks, they were like, what if somebody tunes in and you're playing Oscar Peterson and then they don't know what station they're listening to? They might think that they're not listening to WNUA. I said, let's give it a try. And sure enough, people wrote in. We're so glad to hear Sarah Vaughan on WNUA. We're so glad to hear Oscar Peterson. But when radio died away and jazz was no longer honored in the schools, our music started. Nowadays, it's difficult getting a foothold to get the music. You know, there's a movement here in the United States because as I travel about, almost every high school has a jazz band. There are 500,000 kids playing jazz today. Almost every college has a jazz band.
Right.
And so we say, what happens to these kids when they graduate from college? Why don't they become consumers? Why don't they demand to have a jazz club in their neighborhood? Or why don't they go to Ravinia more often? At this point in time, believe it or not, in the last several days, few weeks, there are a group of us here in Chicago exploring that premise. Why haven't kids coming out of college become consumers?
What I mean, as you explore it, what are some of the theories around that?
I don't have them yet.
You don't have them yet. It's too early in the research.
When we have them, if you invite me,
you're back.
I'll be glad to come back.
Yes,
and say,
of course.
Here's what we found.
Yes, I'd love to have you back. That'd be a great conversation. In your career, I mean, you have continued to put out music. And like we said at the beginning, 75, 80 albums. You also are working on new music every single day.
Yeah.
You've got your piano in your house. You mentioned even before we started that it's almost like a habit for you. Talk about, you know, what music means to you and what it means to you now at the age of 81 years old. What is music and what does it do for you in your life?
Music is like having breakfast and having lunch and having dinner. When I go to the piano, it's like that. I mean, if I don't go to the piano at least once a day, then my day is incomplete. Now, when my wife and I go on vacation or something is up where I can't, then it's okay because I understand, hey, you're on vacation, buddy.
Right.
You know. But if there are 52 weeks in a year, I go out on weekends and play concerts, which means most weeks, Monday through Thursday or so, I'm home. And almost every day, if not every day, for about 3-4 hours or more a day, I'm at the piano practicing Hanon or Bach or Chopin, and then I put that away and I just start writing some music. I find it very inspiring to keep my foot in classical music, to keep my hands in classical music. In fact, sometimes I'm playing some Bach, and I'll get to a phrase, da-da-dee-da-dee, and I'm like, oh, really? Da-da-dee-da-dee. And I'll close the book, and I'll get out my pencil, and I'll say, ah, do-do-dee-do-dee-da-dee-da-dee, and I can write up, you know. So this world of music is so rewarding in so many different ways for me.
You know, for you, I mean, you've had an opportunity with Ravinia, working at Ravinia, doing the workshop and being a part of the Ravinia jazz experience there. Also working at Merit Music, some of the places that you've been able to stay in music. But one of the things you did at Ravinia was have the opportunity to play with the symphony orchestra and do a little bit more classical music. You know, when you think back to how we started this conversation about being 4 years old and learning classical music, it's sort of this full circle idea of Ramsey Lewis, the great jazz aficionado, the great jazz musician, Ramsey Lewis, being able to get back to what he started in, which was classical music.
Well, one of the biggest thrills that I had was last year performing with the CSO, Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Wills Kaufman, of course, runs the Ravinia Festival. And a year or so before that, he says, Ramsey, how would you like to play with the CSO? I said, great. So I thought he meant play some songs. He says, why don't you write something? I said, whoa, write something for the CSO? You know, it's overwhelming because the CSO is one, if not the number one orchestra in the world, it's number one and a half. Or whatever. I mean, you know, it's right. The number one orchestra in the world. So I went home, and I for a few weeks, maybe at least 3-4 weeks, I'm sitting at the piano, and I'm trying all kinds of stuff. And my wife says, what are you doing? I said, I can't get started. She said, you know, you're too overwhelmed with Tchaikovsky and Beethoven, and close those books, stop trying those classical figures, and just improvise. I've seen you, she says to me. I've seen you go to the piano, sit down, and for an hour or more, just improvise. Just play whatever comes to mind. Turn on a tape recorder, and afterwards, see what you got. I did that for 2-3 days. And afterwards, I turned it on, and I said, voila, there's a phrase. Oh, there's another phrase. And I find that gave me the confidence to say, you know, you've got some music in you that can be arranged for Chicago Symphony Orchestra and the Ramsey Lewis Trio.
It's amazing to have you in the studio, Ramsey. Big fan of yours. You've made such a contribution to the city of Chicago, not just with music, but being here broadcast and being a citizen here in the city. I'd love to have you back because I'd love to talk about that study that you guys are putting together. Ramsey Lewis, great jazz musician, one-time radio broadcaster here at WNUA. Ramsey, thanks for being my guest tonight at the Big Table.
Great being with you.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. Ramsey Lewis, how about that? Great to have the jazz legend in studio. Marty DeRosa joins me now.
The new jazz legend.
You're going to be here for the worst, which is coming up here. Are you excited about it? I think you're excited. You're always excited.
I'm always excited.
You're always excited. 312-981-7200. I want to tell you, Marty and Rashida Sheeds from Second City will also join us tonight. The worst is going to start after 9 o'clock. I'm excited because, and I've been talking about it all show, we have some amazing tickets to give away. We've got Tom Jones.
I saw him as a young boy at the Star Plaza in Maryville, Indiana, and oh my God, it changed my life.
House of Blues coming up here. We also have a 4-pack of passes to the EAA Air Venture Oshkosh. It's an air show. It's like one of the most like historic air shows in the area.
And you're in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
I mean, come on. Just for playing the worst. That's what I love about it. I'm like, you don't have to do a lot. You just got to text in something that happened to you that's the worst.
These prizes keep getting bigger and bigger every time I come back.
every time.
It was amazing.
Well, we'll have the worst coming up here at 9 o'clock. Right now, just give you an update. The White Sox lead the Chicago Cubs in the bottom of the eighth inning. Pedro Strop is on for the Cubs. No sign of Aroldis Chapman. Probably won't see him tonight just due to the fact that the Cubs are losing. But then again, it is the White Sox, and they'll probably blow it in the ninth just to come back and win because that's what they do. For some reason, they make it so hard to be mediocre. That's our Chicago White Sox. What can you do? Also, coming up at 10 o'clock, we are going to continue our coverage of the Democratic National Convention. The convention motors on tonight. President Bill Clinton, former President Bill Clinton, will take the stage. Obviously, this, I guess, would be the first lady portion of the, you know, like Melania Trump and Michelle Obama.
Will he be the first man?
Yeah, I don't know. I saw some things that, like, already kind of trying to figure out how that's all going to work out. Because there's some rituals and things that would be reversed, you know.
I hope he starts it with "Take my wife, please." Just kidding, and then everybody just goes crazy. Like this guy, he's the best.
He's the best. Remember this guy? Remember this guy?
Man, where's he been?
So that's coming up at 10 o'clock. We'll talk. Dave Lundy's actually in Philadelphia. He just tweeted out, Pete, you like this? He just tweeted out a picture with Tim Kaine. So Dave Lundy, who's a Chicago analyst, Democrat, comes on the show weekly. He lands in Philadelphia maybe 2 hours ago, and he's now taking pictures with Tim Kaine, the vice presidential candidate. So that shows you a little clout that he's got. He said he's going to be watching it up in a skybox tonight. So there you go. He's in Philly in a skybox. Guess you could do worse.
Yeah. Skybox in Oshkosh.
He could do the air show in Oshkosh, right? All right, so that's all coming up at 10 o'clock. Also, we'll check in with Ro Khan, who is watching the speeches so we don't have to tonight. And he will give us reaction and analysis, just as he did last night. He's in Philadelphia for the remainder of the week. So that's coming up as well. Ramsey Lewis was just on the show. Unbelievable. And he, like you said, it's really interesting. And Pete, you and I, we've talked about this, and we've had guests on the program. Again, public schools come up. You know, we've talked to different musicians and people who've gone through the system and talked about, you know, having Gallery 37 as an option. You know, we talked to Jeremiah, the R&B star, or Donnie Trumpet, all talking about sort of learning their craft and their musicianship from Gallery 37 or from Chicago Public Schools. And that's a big thing because schools continue to cut back on music programs. And Ramsey Lewis, once again, brought up the topic, unrelated, talking about how public schools may be the reason that we've seen really a reduction in, or not a reduction, but just a downfall of jazz music. That it used to be that you would join band and you'd learn jazz classics or standards, and then people would come out of that with some training in trumpet and be able to improvise or try something new. And because those have been cut back, people aren't being exposed. Kids aren't being exposed to trumpets, trombones, you know, if they're doing anything, they're going straight to guitar or microphone or whatever it is, but they're not getting to the fundamentals and the musicianship that many jazz musicians have from different generations. So that's interesting as well to say that it's quite possible that that could be leading to the reason that jazz is disappearing in this country. And he also talked about how there's still jazz musicians that are coming out or people that are playing jazz, but the jazz consumer is disappearing. And why is that? That's an interesting question, and that's what he said. He's doing some research with some people here in Chicago, and he will return and come back on our show. But Ramsey Lewis on the download tonight, Big Table, one of my faves. I'm a huge electric jazz guy.
Yeah, they say, I mean, like other countries, especially France, they say jazz is our number one export.
Yeah, it's weird. Ramsey Lewis can go on a European tour right now and just sell out huge rooms.
To me, that's the fascinating thing of people who could be, you know, at a Starbucks with you and you go, oh, who's that guy? And then people would lose their minds in another country.
It's true.
It's amazing.
It's amazing to think about.
Bands that have, you know, have since gone away are like headlining these 100,000 people, like festivals in Chile or something like that. And to me, jazz, I mean, I don't know. There's nothing cooler than jazz.
And it is interesting that we live in the birthplace of jazz, Chicago being the city that really brought it to the forefront. And there's so much jazz history here, and it's just, I mean, we didn't really take care of it. I mean, there's so many different clubs that just went away, music that's just not being honored, even by the people that live here to go see it. It's the last time you saw a jazz show in Chicago. I like jazz, and I'm like,
yeah, but if you're, like, just, there's something cool about having a good drink and being at a jazz bar. It's just you feel cool.
It's a stand-up base.
I don't understand how they can't like market that of just like, you want to be cool? I used to go to the Hungry Brain, would have jazz nights, and just like, I remember like, if I wanted to impress a girl, I'm like, I'm taking her to the Hungry Brain on Sunday night for jazz night.
There you go.
And you're just like, they walk in, they're like, who are you to be this cool? I'm like, oh, I don't know, you know, just check out jazz, I guess.
I'm just, you know.
Just a jazz connoisseur,
Marty Jazz. I've been there too. I've been there too. I took a date one time to Evanston High School to see Orbert Davis play trumpet, and it was so classy. So classy. Yeah. She never called me again, but so classy.
That's her loss. That was her loss.
It may have had something to do with our first or second date being in a gymnasium, high school gymnasium, watching jazz, but you know, it does what it does.
Nothing says romantic like the basketball hoops are up. You know what I mean? Nothing like the reverberation of jazz off those basketball hoops that have been raised. You know, and like one's a little lower, so it's kind of throwing you off. Like, what's going on here?
There's a distinct
smell. A janitor just going by.
You guys can't be in here.
Kid selling candy bars for the basketball team. Like, hey, I'm enjoying the jazz. Oh, just give me $5 for this candy bar.
Now that I think about it, maybe not the best idea. All right, we'll be back. We're going to start the worst in just a second.
It's going down,
All right, it's time for the worst here on the download. I'm Justin Kaufman. Of course, the worst, our weekly segment where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. Marty DeRosa, comedian, is in studio. Rashida Shees is going to join us in just a second. Marty, the man behind the Marty and Sarah Love Wrestling podcast, which is on iTunes, and also behind the show Comedians You Should Know at Timothy O'Toole's, which is Wednesday night. Good to see you, Marty. How are you?
Good to be back.
Good to have you. Like I said, we've got great prizes, unbelievable prizes for tonight. 312-981-7200. We got a pair of tickets to see legendary performer Tom Jones on October 3rd at the House of Blues. We've got some passes to the Air Venture Oshkosh, which is the best air show, winner of the best air show by USA Today. That's actually all week long, so we got a pack of passes for that. And then we also have a MyPillow. We have a pillow.
Ooh, those are good.
Those are three good ones.
That pillow's not to be messed with. That is a real deal pillow.
So that's all for playing the worst tonight. 312-981-7200. Why don't we kick it off? Pete Zimmerman's our official would you call yourself master of ceremonies?
Mm-hmm.
You're sort of like you're the guy they go to every single time to start the worst. So Pete Zimmerman, do us the honors tonight.
Justin, you know what's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
When people shout out song titles at a concert. When they, you know, like the band doesn't already know what they're playing. Or if they hear you yell, they'll say, you know, oh my God, we totally forgot we had that one.
I'll yes and that one. One of the things I love the most is when someone just yells Freebird because they think they're so hilarious.
Yep.
And they're at a concert and they're like, what should we play? Freebird! Yeah. First time. What's up? Give me a high five, anybody?
I was at a concert recently, and I saw this band called Pup. They're a fantastic punk band from Canada.
Uh-huh.
And they just came on stage, and somebody was yelling something. And they go, hey, we're going to close with that song. We're not doing an encore. We're not going to leave and wait and come back. This is a hard stage to get. I was at Subterranean. They have this weird spiral staircase. They go, so don't scream it out the whole show. We're going to close with that song.
Wait, seven songs.
There's not going to be an encore. I'm just like, yes, thank you.
Thank you.
What are we doing this like illusion of like hiding behind a curtain for 10, 9, 8,
They're peeling
7.
It back.
Let's do it. I love it.
The transparency in music.
I love it.
All right, good. All right, what do you got, Marty? What's the worst?
Having had this week where it seemed like the end of the world was coming with the rain in Chicago, the worst is leaving your house like a nice evening.
Yeah.
Not a drop of rain probably is going to come in the world. And then one second, it gets dark and you go, oh, it's the end of times.
Yeah.
And then you get caught in the rain.
I would even go past that. I mean, I would say also homeowners, when that kind of rain comes through, it's the worst when you're like, oh, geez, I hope none of this rain gets in.
Mm.
And then it does.
Yeah, our basement used to flood all the time.
Oh, yeah. It's just like the idea that there's puddles of water in your house.
Nothing. I remember at my house where I grew up in Indiana, going down in the basement. It was like I'd go out at night, come home after a couple beers, and I would go sneak down into the basement to like watch TV and fall asleep on the couch.
Squish.
You're in your socks and that first step. And you're like, no.
No.
So that is
the worst. You're trying to be quiet, taking out the old towels.
Oh, man.
Like with your hands mopping the floor. Yeah, that is the worst. All right. Let's see what we got here. 269 says the worst is the Cubs losing two in a row to the White Sox.
Yeah. I mean,
I guess, but I mean, it's baseball.
Oh, not for Cubs or Sox fans. This is a big deal.
I guess.
Isn't it weird how that is a big deal for him and me? And you were like, meh, whatever.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, we're the ones broadcasting tonight, but I honestly have no, I don't know what it is about the Crosstown Cup and the way they try to market it in these two teams, but I have very little interest in the gimmick that is the two of them playing. I mean, if both teams were in first place, I'd be very excited about it. The Sox kind of
World Series.
Yeah, the Sox already kind of drifted away, and they're not playing so well. They're mediocre. So it's like you knew it. And we joked on the show, I think it was Friday, that you know the Sox are going to sweep this just because that's the way baseball works.
I'm a little naive to this. Are they, like, playing for something? Like, is it like colleges? No. Are they like, we're playing for the Rusty Bucket or something?
It used to be that way, but they tried to manufacture it because it was a brand-new thing with, I think it was BP.
Okay.
Like, try to make, like, a trophy out of it. Like, you get the BP trophy, and quickly everyone's like, no, this is just pride. We're not playing for anything. 312-981-7200. 217 says the worst is moving equipment for a municipal band concert. 100-plus degrees before the concert and downpour after. Yeah, that would be the worst.
That is no fun.
That is no fun.
That is no fun.
I will do one just for the Democratic National Convention and the conventions. The worst is the old lady who wears the oversized goofy sunglasses indoors. Like, all right, you go every year. Like, this is every 4 years, this is your thing.
I got to wear them.
Everyone's counting on me. They're going to use it on all the broadcasts.
Chris
Matthews. To be there.
Chris Matthews said I was a breath of fresh air in a world of silly politics.
You know that she's just like gearing up. She's ready.
Oh, yeah.
And they did that today, like, with all of it's almost like every single state that had to read their.
Oh, how about. Enough of these.
From the great state of Alaska, where you can get the best shoelaces in the country. And you're like, what? We make the best shoelaces you'll ever put on your shoes in Alaska.
I don't know why my Alaska guy turned into New York at the end. Hey, we're from Alaska. How you doing? We had the best pizza. Huh? People say Chicago. Some people say Alaska.
We really got great salmon.
Man.
You're going to love us salmon.
There's some of those. I'm just like, I was watching the Republican when they were doing that roll call. And the stuff they were proud about, it was just like, shut up.
And I think for this one, too, what they did for the Democrats, which is different, is they handed it off. They handed it off to different people to be like, here's our honorary person who's going to call the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually was someone up there in age who's like, I'm 104.
Aww.
And this is what Kentucky's going to do.
Yeah.
And I'm up for Hillary Clinton. And you're like, all right, we can make this a lot faster.
You're so adorable.
You're so adorable.
Sorry. That's what I like. I like adorable old people at the conventions.
All right, 312-981-7200. That's our phone number, 312-981-7200. Call or text and let us know what your worst is because we're playing for big-time prizes tonight. Tom Jones tickets, also passes to the Oshkosh Air Show, and pretty cool, a MyPillow. So we'll get to the callers, and we'll do some of the text coming up here after the break. Stay with us. All right, it's a download. It's the worst. 312-981-7200 in studio with me tonight, Marty DeRosa. Marty and Sarah Love Wrestling is the new podcast on iTunes, which is doing pretty well. You guys are wrestling podcasts are a thing now.
You're
actually a veteran of wrestling podcasts.
I am a veteran of a wrestling podcast, and we have, it's got me and my friend Sarah Shockey, who's an amazing, hilarious comedian from Chicago here. And it's different because it's all just guys like, well, and then this happened and I didn't like it. And we kind of have a whole, it's kind of like an old timey radio show. We do a lot of impressions of wrestlers and we get very, very silly. So it's been cool.
All right. So that's on iTunes. You can also check out the show Comedians You Should Know at Timothy O'Toole's every Wednesday night, right around the corner from North Michigan Avenue. All right. 312-981-7200. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Deborah. Deborah, what's the worst, Deborah?
The worst is when you live in an apartment complex. Everybody shares the same laundry room.
Yeah, it's the worst.
And I like to do my wash real early so I don't have to deal with other people. Their detergent. Mm-hmm. Did it real early, fell asleep, got up, went to the laundry room. No sight of any of my clothes.
What? Like the clothes were completely gone?
There, I left them in the dryer overnight, and they were completely gone.
So someone's like, oh, yeah, I'm in some free jeans.
I had it where...
Well, it is scary when that happens. Yeah. Now I want to move.
Deborah, how do you feel if you would have come down and all your laundry was neatly folded? That happened to me once. I felt so weird. I'm like, who did that?
Yeah, that's interesting.
That is weird, too.
Well, Deborah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't like that. That's just, I mean, the worst is, yes, the worst is theft. That's no good. Well, hopefully, you know what? If well, I was going to say, we don't really have anything that could replace that, a pillow. Maybe we'll see. Well, Deborah, thanks for that. I've got a great story about that. I think I could tell because we're late enough at night. When I was doing a sketch comedy show, Schadenfreude, I had a bit at the end of the show in which I was just a regular guy, and at the end I kind of got angry, and we went into this flash sequence on stage where I ripped my clothes off because I didn't get the right coffee or whatever, and underneath I wore, as part of the joke, I wore the underwear I wore were like these velvet, red velvet kind of hot pants. Right. And that was a joke. This guy, oh, I was all prepared for it. And, you know, rips the clothes off. That's on. And the bit continues to go, and it continues to go, in which at the end, I rip the person's heart out. We have a fake heart and I bite it and there's blood. And then the
Indiana
lights go
Jones
up.
Style.
Yeah. And then the lights go up and they're like, here's your coffee, sir. And I'm like, oh, like that's the bit. But it's a huge, huge thing. And, you know, so it was the heart was made with Cairo syrup. So it was really gross. Like the you know, the fake blood that we would use. So I would have to go, I'd go over to the laundromat next door to clean them before the show. And I would do the same thing, Deborah. I would leave it there and I'd come back. And I came back. And this was right before showtime. I remember it was maybe 3 hours and I was doing it with all my clothes. And I was like, huh, those red velvet hot pants are gone.
What?
So somebody, and this is, I guess, an urban myth that people go through laundry to find lingerie because they have some interest in that, some fetish in that. And they took that thinking it was some beautiful woman's when they had no idea that I was the one.
Yeah, that happens. Well, you know what? If a quick wrestling story. There's often times where female wrestlers, especially on like the lower level, not before WWE, but your independent wrestling federations. There's an awesome one in Berwyn called Shimmer Wrestling. And there's some fanatics who will say, hey, female wrestler A, could I buy your socks maybe or your outfit you wear?
Are you kidding me?
And one time a girl just told all these guys that were wrestling, hey, put these socks on, get them all nice and smelly, and then I'm going to sell them to these creeps after the show, which I love.
It's good. Everyone's making
it's
money
great.
Off creepiness.
Like, it's so-and-so. It's like, nope, it's actually that dude over there.
All right. Here we go. All right. Let's go to the phones. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Kate. Kate, what's the worst?
Hi, sorry about that. I was on hold. I have a couple. One is that new phenomenon where everyone decides they want to pull into the middle of the intersection. They block people's traffic for blocks on every direction.
Yeah, that is the worst. You see that in Chicago. That's a phenomenon that I call Clark Street.
Like I call that the, what are you going to do, hit me?
Yeah, exactly. I deserve to get through this intersection. I'm a driver.
It's relatively new, yeah.
Yeah, that's no good. All right.
That's the worst. Okay, so what worst number two,
oh, you get two
is when people know something that they're doing, this tradition is stupid, and they do it anyway.
Case in point?
Like there's a festival in Wisconsin, the Toma or County Fair. It's like one of those regional county fairs. And they're doing this thing called Hug a Pig, which is basically taking a piglet, cornering it, and throwing it into this huge gallon thing of water, and it's very sad and like horrible.
That sounds horrible.
Cancel it, and you know it's just awful. And all these people are trying to get them to cancel it, and they're like, "Well, we're going to do it this year.
It's tradition,
but maybe not next year."
Yeah, right. It's tradition. I mean, when you hug a pig, and you know that's tradition.
You got to do it.
You got to do it.
Otherwise, it's 20 years of bad luck.
Hug a pig is a front runner
for sure.
Right. Thank you, Kate. Thank
down
you.
With hug a pig and love your show.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Thank you very much for calling. And she knows how to butter up the judges right at the end there. All right.
like they buttered up that pig.
Hug a pig. Hug a buttered pig. All right. So 262 says, and this is a good one too. The worst is when you can't go in your backyard for 3 days because a blue jay keeps attacking you.
What did you do to that blue jay, sir? That's my question.
That blue jay, man. You got to exert some dominance.
Oh, yeah.
You got to go out there a little aggressive. You can't let this blue jay dominate your life.
You can't show fear in front of a blue jay. That's what my dad always used to tell me. Said, he right? always used to tell me, Marty, you can't show fear in front of those blue jays.
Oh, good stuff. All right, so let's continue. Let's go to Jeff. Jeff, what do you got, Jeff? What's the worst?
Jeff, not so much the worst, but I guess I'm the worst because I'm the guy who folds other people's laundry when he finds that they've left it in the machine overnight in the building.
I thought we'd meet again, Jeff.
Yeah.
You well, maniac.
I can't help it. You know, these people are so thoughtless to leave there. They're the worst. They leave their laundry in there all night. It's like the one car that decides to block the whole tunnel.
Yeah. And just the zones, man. I'll bring it together.
He's Michael Douglas and Falling Down. He's had enough. He's had enough. At my apartment, one of my buddies who's a comic, he made a joke about this because it was so funny. There used to be these girls who lived downstairs, and he was doing laundry, and one of them had left a pair of very small underwear in the dryer, and he's like bringing it up, knocking on the door, and he's like, "What am I doing?" And he was gonna be like, "Missing something?" Like,
yeah, right.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
That is good.
Ricky Gonzalez.
Jeff, well, I like your style. I like the fact that you fold people's laundry as opposed to whatever Deborah faced, where they just lifted it, they just stole it.
Well, see, I hate to say it, but this is more. I think it's more disturbing to have your laundry all folded.
Yeah, it is. It's a real mind game, Jeff. You're playing some real mind games with people.
You're going to put on their body.
You are evil.
Remind them not to do this again.
Jeff, yeah. You love it. You love folding other people's clothes. You could say
I'm going to up my game now when I hear that you're delivering panties directly to people's doorways.
Wow.
Oh, God.
Keep it under control,
you're
Jeff.
Killing it with the laundry stuff tonight. Thanks, Jeff. That's good stuff. Let's go to Jerry. Jerry, what's the worst, Jerry?
Well, last week and this week has reminded me that even though we live in a country with over 300 million people, the two major parties cannot find two people that I feel good voting for.
Oh.
Yeah,
yeah, good point. That's a good point, Jerry. Thanks for that. I guess that's true.
She's talking about American Idol?
She's talking about The Bachelorette.
The Bachelorette.
All right.
Oh, man.
312-981-7200, the phone number. This is good stuff tonight. Very laundry themed.
I love it.
I give it a little. I like it. Laundry I like to get one talk. Laundry thing. Like it's like when we did grocery store one week, and then it was just a flood of grocery store worst. I like the laundry worst.
I do too.
I'm in a situation where I could probably relate because I have a unit in my place.
Ooh.
But it broke.
Must be nice. Ooh. You had a taste of the good life.
Yeah, so I got the guy to come out. He comes out. And he's like, oh, this is a problem. And that doesn't fix it. Next guy comes down and goes, oh, it's a huge problem. Right? It goes from, oh, it's a little problem to, oh, it's a huge problem. And I have to make a decision on whether, and this is the worst. The worst is living in a condo culture because I live in a townhome, which is essentially like an upper deck condo, where every appliance is customized size. Meaning that if you go to the Home Depot right now to buy a washer, it'll be like 33-inch depth. That's what you need. And like this place they have mine is like 22.
Some weird.
Yeah, and you're like, well, they don't even, and they're like, oh, they don't make those. So that's customized. And you're like, what? Why would you do that? When you built this place in 2000, why would you customize? Everything is different. Nothing is the same as what the standard is in the damn Home Depot.
I hate when I'm on the second floor also, and I have to go down to the basement, and I'll have my laundry basket, and I'll be like, I forgot my quarters. Then I have to go back up, which is not a big deal. But when you're, you know, tired or you don't want to do laundry, you gotta go.
I mean, we could do a million of these.
Sure.
Because I was going to say the worst is also when you're on a time crunch and maybe a rush hour situation where there's a lot of people and you've got a crappy dryer and your clothes are still wet. Mm-hmm. And you got to either commit and invest a couple more quarters or take that stuff up wet.
It's the people, the people who have never gone to the, see, I think like, I don't have a car anymore, so I have to take the bus and the train, and I'm like, I think everybody should have to do that. Everybody should have to not have a car for a little bit. Everybody should not have in-unit laundry for a little bit, just to kind of see how the other half lives.
Right. All right, let's get through some of these calls. Let's go to Sarah. Sarah, what's the worst, Sarah?
For me, the worst is when people put on Facebook, like a picture of Jesus or something, and it says like if you're not embarrassed to be a Christian or if you're not embarrassed to say you like Jesus, post or share. And it's just like it makes me so mad because for one, I think Jesus probably wouldn't be too down with most of the stuff that goes on Facebook.
Right.
And then second of all, it's like I scroll through it like, oh, that's so obnoxious. But then a second later, I'm like, man, I should probably like that. Otherwise, like, what is Jesus?
Like, you're going to get to heaven. You're going to get to heaven one day.
Based on how many likes.
And Jesus is going to be like, oh, I know you. Yeah. You didn't like my picture on Facebook.
There's nothing worse than a religious like. I mean, that's the worst. You're right. That is very good. Okay, thank you. That's a good one, Sarah. I'm going to keep that one in high regard. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll get to the news. We'll come back and continue the worst. The people on the line, Mike, there's other people on the line. Stay on the line. I got a ton of text to read as well. 312-981-7200. We're playing for some big prizes tonight. A pair of tickets to see Tom Jones. Also got a four-pack to the Oshkosh Air Show. I don't think there's water involved. And also a... My pillow, a pillow.
Mm.
And all I'll say is like, what's the worst? And you get a pillow.
And I'll come do your laundry.
and I'll fold it.
There you go.
Or stay with us.
What's going down?
All right, so worst here. We're at the halfway point, and that means we introduce another panelist, Rashida Sheeds Alilawa. Is that close?
Oh,
not
man,
even close.
I knew you was going to struggle with it.
Man, I had it. I had it in my hand, and then I wrote it down. Aaliyah Lawa.
No, just stop.
What You're is getting it? Worse.
It's no, I had it.
Olayuwala. Celebrate the essence of
I
the
know,
name.
I know, Aaliyah Lawa. Now I see what I wrote. Yeah.
That's that Shigerian.
Yeah. Well, we're going to call you Sheeds.
There we go.
Sheeds is a comedic actress by way of Second City, NBC, other places. She also does a lot of community work here in Chicago. Sheeds, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
All right. And, of course, Marty DeRosa is here. Marty's podcast, Marty and Sarah Love Wrestling, can be found on iTunes. And also Comedians You Should Know at Timothy O'Toole's every Wednesday night. Playing the worst, 312-981-7200. All right, Sheeds, you know how this works?
You can go first. Some of the worst things that happen in the world or just to me, what I don't like.
You can be interpreted either way, but I think probably better if it's worst. Stuff that happens to you.
The worst is when you go to Chipotle, and what's crazy is I just started trusting Chipotle again. Go to Chipotle, and you order a bowl or a burrito,
sure.
And they give you a rice fest and like four cubes of meat.
They just pile the rice on.
Like, don't give me four chicken cubes. Give me what you would give yourself, you know? For
chicken
real.
Cubes.
You want to be like, are you the owner of Chipotle?
And then, right. And then they tease you because they chop the meat in the back in front
right,
of you.
Right.
And then they scoop, look, they shuffle four cubes.
And usually you never see the fresh stuff that's in the back.
No, it's no you don't. They give you a shuffle.
I'm the
I
last.
I don't want a shuffle. I want a scoop.
Yeah. I'm the last one where they're
right.
They all give... the like guacamole. I'm like, you have a big one right over there. Get that big one out.
Give me some of that charred chicken.
So to the person who made my burrito in the Chipotle on Wells, they're the worst.
Yeah, they're the worst. All right,
well, the worst
you
are the ones who burnt the building down at the other place.
All right, 312-981-7200. Let's go to the phones. Let's start off with Mike. Mike, what's the worst, Mike?
So, I don't know. I guess I had one, and I still go with it, but you guys are more on the comedic path tonight, which is good.
Good.
there's not enough humor in the world. So I guess if it's okay, I'll go with the serious and then humorous, if it's okay.
Okay, you can go. Okay, two of them. Go ahead.
So, first one that I called in with was I hate when people don't take responsibility for their actions and try to blame someone else or act better than someone else.
Okay.
Drives me up a wall.
That's the worst.
And so, okay. By that I mean, today I'm working with an individual, and he says, man, when are the guys going to come up here and clean and change the bags in the garbage can? And I said, seriously, dude? Seriously? I run into my bag, and I happen to be his boss, and I'm that guy. I went into my desk and I grabbed the roll of bags I had. I said, now change all the bags. He goes, well, I'm not a custodian. And I said, well, they're not your mother.
You had bags in your
desk?
I
think the bigger thing, you had bags in your desk? He just mad because the Cubs lost, too. I think he sound like he mad because I know the Cubs lost. I'm sorry. It's okay.
Mike, all right, what's the comedic one? Because that was pretty funny.
He was a Sox fan and I am a Cubs fan.
Yeah, there. She's onto something.
There it is. I knew it. I felt it.
We all have our crosses to bear in life. I'm good with it.
All right. So what's the funny one? Was that that's not the funny one?
No. Hey. You know what? I'll take it. But here's the one that drives me even more crazy than that. So you have a nice cup of coffee in the morning, and it's your ritual, and you need to have your cup of coffee, and you're drinking it on the way to work, and you take that last twig of coffee,
and you get that whole mouthful of ground.
Oh, yeah.
It kills the whole cup.
There you go. That's good. That's a good one. That is right in line with the worst. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for that. I think the question is why you have all the bags in your desk.
Sounds like a fun office.
Right.
Let's go to Ed. Ed, what's the worst, Ed?
Yeah. Maybe it's me. I used to live in Old Irving Park, and we sold our house. And just at the time we sold our house, it was like a month before you have to leave. And these little raccoons started showing up.
Really? Oh, I hate raccoons.
We thought, what the heck? Let's start feeding them, right? And then we get a few more. every night at dusk, there's like a dozen raccoons.
Are you kidding me? I wonder why. You're feeding them.
But we also know we're leaving, right?
So now we're thinking, this is
kind of funny. So we've got a dozen raccoons, and now they're coming up on the deck. And then, you know, we're feeding them bread or whatever we have, you know, whatever they're going to eat. And then we realize, we're moving. Okay, see you later. Hope it's not too bad for you when you show up.
Hey, Ed, I think I saw a meme video about the raccoons at your house. There's this meme video on Facebook, and there's like this raccoon stealing food from the cat's bowl. Is that your house?
Did Ed call to say he's the worst?
I think he said he was the worst.
Right now, there's some family living in that house going, that's why we have all these raccoons.
He's like, I knew it.
I can just imagine they're just going nuts when the first day they moved in and they just saw a dozen raccoons on the back deck.
Oh, that's evil. All right, Mike.
I didn't do it on purpose.
All right, Ed. Good job.
I kind of feel him though, Justin. Sometimes we all see you later, guys.
Thanks, buddy. You feel him?
Yeah, because I'm that person where, I have my best friend in New York, LaShawn, and I'm that person. You tell me some serious stuff, but I'll start laughing when it's not supposed to be funny.
Well, that was kind of funny, right?
It was, but like I was trying to say, like, I think we all can be the worst at times.
Hey, you're giving away the overall theme of this.
Oh, my bad.
All right, let's keep going. Let's go to Al. Al's got a bad laundry story. What do you got, Al?
Yeah, I lived in a condo, and I don't wait for nobody. Nobody waits for me.
Oh.
I'm prompt. Okay, so I had a girlfriend. She moved in with me, and I was working, and she went down to do laundry, and, I told her, here's how much time it takes for this and this.
No dilly-dally.
So I said, don't go down there when it's done. So she did, and our clothes were soaking wet.
Uh-oh.
Some guy in the building took our clothes out. So I asked her, I says, did you make anybody mad or anything? She said, no. I said, you know who the guy is? She says, yeah, the guy from the witch, but whatever. So I said, okay. I went down there, waited. His clothes were in there. I went down there, his clothes were in the washer. I took them out, put them in the sink, soaking wet, and I put my clothes back in,
Savage.
And I waited. So the guy comes down.
And I waited. I love that.
In the dark. I waited in the dark.
I waited in my condo.
With a baseball bat.
Yes. Close.
What happened? Did you confront the guy?
Yeah, I confronted him.
He's prompt. He said that. I don't wait for nobody. Nobody waits for me. Bada bing, bada boom.
What did you say?
When my clothes are in the machine, the dryer, the washer, as long as that machine is running, I own that machine.
Oh, man.
So he looked at me, and I said, you ever touch my clothes again, I says, I'll rip your throat out.
Okay, I think we're talking to Mike Dicker. Dicker, you coming back?
This is Dicker. Al, thanks for that story. Wow. Thank you for that. I'm assuming he's going to have dry clothes for the rest of his time living in that condo.
What an absolute pleasure to live with.
Be prompt.
If I leave a chair out in the winter, that's because I shoveled that spot. And if you take that spot or that chair, I'll rip your
throat
out.
I give Al credit. I mean, he said, this is what we're going to do. This is how I'm going to take care of the situation. I just thought that the passive aggressive move of taking the clothes out and putting it and then waiting.
Ooh.
That's what I like about it. Why not just wait?
I love that at one point, Al waited down there for the entire cycle with a stopwatch going, all right. Your washing machine, you got 32 minutes. Dryer,
look, I'm
you
trying
got
to
27.
Tell y'all, that was Dicker.
It sounded very Dicker-like.
Not only did it sound, that's something he would do. And I waited.
And I waited. All right, let's go to Deborah. Deborah, what is the worst?
Hi, the worst is when you come home from vacation, exhausted, your dog is in the kennel, and you ask your father to pick up the dog.
Uh-oh.
And he is going to pick up the dog, but he picked up the wrong animal.
Yes, he brought him a raccoon.
And the cat was a little bit unfriendly, and my mom was like, usually they're very, very good together. Something's not right.
He brought a cat
home.
No,
he brought a dog.
Yeah, but was the dog similar? Did it look the same, or was it just... Yeah,
he looked very, very close.
Wow.
Very close. It was not the right
that's
one.
That's so good.
But the cat knew.
Deborah, that's good.
Story.
That's a good one. I like that one a lot. Thanks,
there's probably a dad out there who brought the wrong kid home from daycare. And he's like, if you think that's bad, you should hear what I did.
I'm going to call. I better not call.
It could have been the people at the, you know, it could have been your.
Up, right?
It could have been the people at the kennel like, oh my God, welcome to Wicker Bark. No, this is your dog. Yeah. We're at Wicker Bark.
Of course, this is your dog. It's striped, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
Let's keep going. Let's go to Vermont. Is that your name? Vermont? Vermont, what's the worst?
Going to the movies. And before we go in there with my wife and my two kids, 5 and 6, my wife stuffs her purse with just about every snack that you can.
As true Chicagoans do.
That in itself isn't bad. I mean, but, you know, in the summer, it's only snacks. But, you know, during the winter, it's down near White Castle, everything.
Yeah, it's
like
beef stew.
Yeah. Crock pot.
Like I'm preparing my son to be, you know, pretty much instead of being a doctor or a lawyer, you know, the hustle man at 95th selling loose cigarettes and bootleg videos.
Everyone needs
I'm
white
from
socks.
The South Side, so you know.
Everyone needs white socks.
I know where 95th at. Ice cold water.
So that is good. That is Vermont. Thank you for that. That's interesting.
I had a movie theater experience.
True.
You ever do this? You get into a movie theater. There's no one in there. And then you're sitting there in the middle, because I watched that Roger Ebert documentary, and they're like, you go like half the distance of the size of the screen right in the middle. I'm like, I got the perfect seats. Then
someone's
these
right next.
Animals come in and sit right in front of me, the first row in front of me. And I'm just
they
like,
saw the same documentary.
What are you doing? Yeah, but also Ebert wasn't like, hey, here's what you do. You sit right in front of somebody. It's so bizarre.
I would go, and we've done movie etiquette, and I get crazy on this stuff, but the one that I like, or the one I think is the worst, is when you bring kids to a rated R movie. And those kids, and I remember this, and my wife brought this up not too long ago, that we went and saw 8 Mile. And someone brought kids to 8 Mile, right? Eh, maybe not. And the big climactic end, which is the only reason we went to watch Eminem freestyle at the end of the movie, they decided to do big Mac Filet fish quarter pound. Like they were doing like they were hand jamming on the side because they were bored with the movie.
Right.
And I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me, man. That's the worst. Yeah.
then you got another bowl of stew out of your crock pot.
That's right. Marty DeRosa, Sheeds in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll read the text because I have a lot of text here. I really want to get there. And then, we'll give away some prizes. We got some great stuff to choose from
tonight.
What
you got? Can I see it before you give it away?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, okay, I just got it on a sheet.
Yeah. Let me see the sheet. Right. That's all good. Let me look at it first.
What's going down, y'all? Come to worst, my people come first.
It's the worst here on the download, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. We're giving away some great prizes tonight. In studio with me right now, Sheeds.
Yo.
Rashida.
Sheeds all day.
Sheeds all day. Comedic actress by way of Second City, NBC. Also does community work. She'll be back on the program as well. Tell us about that community work, right?
Oh, man. Well, thank you for asking. That's awesome. Because usually it's the other way around. Every time I tell an Uber to drop me off, oh, so you do comedy? I'll be like, oh, God, here you go.
We're sick of comedy, yeah.
Yeah. Sure. No, but yeah, I do community work. I'm a youth mentor, activist, just fighting for all the good things in the world that everybody deserves. And I mentor a lot of kids on the South Side. I'm a South Side born and bred. Julian High School, Harper High School, Morgan Park. And right now we actually got a book bag drive going on because I feel that every kid should go to school with that feeling. Remember how you used to feel when you would get your new school supplies and your new clothes? Everybody should have that feeling. I just want everybody to have a shot because, you know, we matter.
Did you say Morgan Park? You went to Morgan Park?
I did not. But I did not go to Morgan Park. I mentor on the South Side, so most of my students are South Side kids.
We had,
and they go to those schools that don't get fair treatment.
Morgan Park
resources.
Was Jeremiah, the R&B star.
Yeah, Jeremiah.
He went to Morgan Park.
That's my homie.
Yeah,
he went to Columbia, too.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I'm out there just fighting for rights, equality for all people. And it's just... Right now, you know, the world is so, it can be so ugly, but I want to be that light and I want to be that change that I want to see. So it starts with you. You know, a lot of people talk, but I'm all about, okay, let's do it. Let's, and however I can, I go by inspire people, inspire people. And each one, teach one, reach one. So I have these little sayings that are, some of them are African proverbs, but it really ignites on, you have so many people who talking. And when I came in, you guys were talking about social media, and so many people get on social media, and that's fine. I use my platform too, but after it's all said and done, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And Chicago, I'm Chicago over everything. I love my city. Even being on a show, hearing these thick accents, I love it because it's like, this is where I'm from. So if I'm going to be here, while I'm here, I'm going to do my best to make it great and make it better. And it starts with our youth. It starts with the people who are going to be responsible for our future.
Well, let's. What we'll do is, I'd love to have you back. Maybe we'll do something outside the worst and talk
for
about
sure.
your
I'm
work.
I'm sorry, man. I can talk
she's
about
the best.
Oh,
she's the best.
She's not the worst.
That's a different
she's the
segment.
Best.
That's the worst. It's the worst
I'm
is Marty DeRosa.
Oh, man.
Oh, nice boo.
Let me tell you
I'm
what I'm doing.
Changing.
Let me tell you what I'm doing. I'm taking out laundry. I'm taking parking spots.
I'm
throwing your chairs off in the winter.
Marty and Sarah Love Wrestling. It's on iTunes. Also, Comedians You Should Know at Timothy O'Toole's Wednesday night. All right. So, Marty, we've essentially narrowed down what we have. And I have a ton
the delegates,
of text.
The super delegates have spoken.
Right, that's right.
We have the worst.
All right. So, let me go through some of these and we can see what we have here. 630 starts us off with the worst is getting a phone call while washing your hands.
Okay. Who still answers phone calls?
Yeah, right.
That's weird.
Like on a house phone or just...
I don't know.
Isn't that crazy?
Who still has a house phone?
But maybe it's your cell phone. I mean, either way, you're washing your hands.
That's
right?
True because it's hard to hit that swipe lock.
Yeah, right?
If
you
got an iPhone.
312 says, a Johnsonville brat without mustard. Is the worst.
Yeah.
I don't know about
that. I mean,
that.
Is there any other way to eat it? Because I hate ketchup.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
Right. Let's keep going here. Let's see. Okay.
It's not the worst, but when you have to use the piece of bread for a hot dog.
Oh, and not a hot dog bun?
Yeah.
I used to hate that when I was younger.
It just feels not right.
You know what else is the worst? The booty bread. We used to call it the booty bread when I was younger. It was the last piece of bread, and no one would eat it.
Right.
The butt.
I have a friend who says every tomato at Subway is just like the booty tomato. He goes, how do you just have a bunch of giant, like the last slice
That's
of the tomato?
That's so true.
Right. That's what they're selling. They probably genetically modified the tomato to...
Here's the thing, Marty. I hate tomatoes, but I love sauce.
Well, that's the same way.
I do. They're wet. It's about texture with me.
Oh, see, we're learning about you tonight.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. This is so great.
269, the worst is my wife stealing my pillow because she doesn't have one.
I think here's what's going on.
Right.
I'm on to you.
You're
you
right.
want the pillow.
You want the pillow. You're right.
Going, hey, here's I what's the worst. When I can't go to Tom Jones when all my friends are going to Tom Jones. We're on to you guys. We're smarter than that.
I want the pillow.
620, the worst is when people come to check out at a store and have to tell the cashier their entire life story. All right. You never really 847, the worst is having to go to the bathroom during a softball game. Okay. 815 says a vending machine with, I don't know why they're saying it this way, side note for the vending machine with the dime that doesn't work. You end up spending 5 minutes sliding in a bunch of different ways and it won't make a difference.
I get what he's saying.
Yeah. It just doesn't recognize
just falls
a dime.
Through the bottom.
It just goes right through.
It just keeps hitting the bottom part.
Quarters only, bro.
We don't like your dime.
Take your dimes home.
And you're like, is this dime
Or
fake?
When you put that Chuck E. Cheese piece in and you forgot
work.
It was
yeah.
Chuck E. Cheese.
The worst is having a 269 area code.
Yeah, what is that? Is that a new
where is that? Is that new. Northbrook?
It's probably new. It's probably
Naperville.
Like,
is it Schaumburg?
Schaumburg. 773, the worst men shopping with their wives at Victoria's Secret. They always look so paranoid that they're coming off pervy.
It is difficult. We're out of our element. And we're just like, what do I do here? And I mean, like, yeah, you can't make eye contact. You have to do this whole weird, like, no looking at anybody.
Usually Auntie Anne's is like right across from
always.
The store. So just go over there.
Yeah, let me get a pretzel. Here's my credit card. I'm sure you're gonna look great.
You know,
right here.
Pick something out.
Go
nice.
Get you a pretzel, and get the dipping sauce too.
Maybe if they put the pretzel stand and the dipping sauce inside the Victoria's Secret, they might be onto something. No.
Blinders, maybe, for
Victoria's
Secret.
Well, the best part, again, going back to the story I told about the velvet red hot pants, is that I had to go to stores like Victoria's Secret and to boutiques to get them.
Yeah.
So it was always a fun experience to be like, I'm looking for some hot pants or like men's hot pants. I'm like, no, that doesn't really fit it. It's got to be.
Right.
So you would, and there was only one time where the person went with me. Usually they're like, okay, what are you doing here, pervy? But I'm like, no, it's for a bit. It's for a comedy show. I got to put these on. And it was in New York City, and it was in Soho, and they were so great because they're like, well, they're actually evaluating. They're like, well, you can kind of see your okay, that's good. Yeah. The way the side is, the cut is on this. I'm like, all right, now you've gone all the way the wrong way.
I feel like the old like sitcom trope of like, hey, you're my wife's size, can you try this lingerie on?
Yeah.
That's like completely gone away.
Yeah, right.
I feel like every 80s sitcom had their episode of like Tony going, Angela's this side, can you try this on for Angela? Right. And it's like, it's just really gone away.
That bit has gone away.
Yeah. We need to bring that bit back.
You know, we need to bring it back.
You know what's the worst? Because I take CTA, public trans. When people get on the bus and they know, it's like, you know, your venture don't work.
Yeah.
And they keep swiping it.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's like, you know,
yeah,
you only got 89
times.
Cents on there.
That's
and
weird.
It costs $2.25.
I've done that. I'm knowing that my car doesn't work. And then I get exasperated. And I go, but the system.
Yeah.
Look, on the south side,
rub a manual.
They don't care. The bus driver, no, you got to get off at Halsted. You got to get off.
See, in my experience, and I had one bus driver that taught me the right way. So I did it a couple times where I was just frustrated, like this was Ventra is just messing up. And, you know, I can't take this as a Chicagoan. I just walked on the bus, and they're like, okay, I don't want the conflict.
Yeah.
One guy would not move the bus. There's a whole full bus, and he's like, sir, get back here, son, get back here. And he comes back up there, and he's like, swipe it again. It doesn't work. He's like, there's something wrong with your card. I'm going to let you ride right now,
but
don't pull this drama.
That's a good bus driver.
Yeah.
The bus drivers I get, they just, they're the worst.
They're the worst.
You in the street is always Halsted. You going to get off on Halsted? I mean, okay.
It doesn't matter where you're at.
It don't matter where you at.
The dump of people who didn't pay on Ventress Halsted.
It'd be 35th and King Drive. You going to get off on Halsted.
All right, here's what we got. We got prizes tonight. We got winners tonight. So third place is going to get a MyPillow, guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Visit MyPillow.com. Also, second place is going to get a four-pack of passes to the EAA Air Venture Oshkosh, USA Today's Reader's Choice winner for Best Air Show. Visit this week through July 31st and experience daily air shows, military aerial demonstration team, Canadian forces, snowbirds, and unique aircraft like the world's largest flying boat. Get events, details, and tickets online at eaa.org/airventure. And first place is a pair of tickets to see legendary performer Tom Jones on October 3rd at the House of Blues and a certificate for the House of Blues restaurant and bar. Get tickets at livenation.com or Ticketmaster. All right.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of words.
Now, Tom Jones made What's New Pussycat, right?
Right, right.
He did.
Yeah.
Oh, so
get it. All right, here we go. So third place, we're going to give third place is going to go to Sarah and her rant about people putting Jesus on Facebook and forcing her to like it. And if she doesn't like it, she's not a good Christian.
Brings a new meaning to Catholic guilt.
It's Facebook Christian Catholic Facebook guilt. That's third place. She's going to get the MyPillow. Second place is actually going to go to Al. Al, who complained about the laundry and had a solution.
He's my favorite.
Because he stayed in the basement and waited. And I waited.
Prompt.
That's Dicka.
Yeah, so that's going to be second place, which is passes to the air show in Oshkosh.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I think
cool.
A little time in Wisconsin would be good for him to kind of mellow
out. He needs a little
time
to mellow out.
Relax, Al.
He's going to find he's going to be like, and I ordered cheese curds, and I waited.
I know how long it takes to make cheese curds,
it takes 2 minutes and 35 seconds.
All right, in first place tonight, who's going to get the tickets for Tom Jones? Got to go to Deborah. Deborah with the wrong animal getting picked up at the kennel. Father picks up the wrong dog and brings the dog home after vacation. Deborah, that is definitely the worst.
You can bring that dad. Tell him instead of Tom Jones, they're seeing Elvis. He'll never know the difference.
The best is that the cat knew. Nobody else noticed, but the cat had an attitude. He knew that one is friend.
Are you kidding me, man?
Marty DeRosa, Rashida Sheeds, you guys both, thanks for playing tonight. We'll have you guys back for sure. Great to have you here on another edition of The Worst. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're now transitioning to coverage of the Democratic National Convention. Day two, a big one that saw former President Bill Clinton talk to the stage, but much, much more coming down the pipe, including a roll call in which a ceremonial end where Bernie Sanders spoke to the crowd. Let's bring in Dave Lundy, one and a half, the better half of Touche. He is in Philadelphia. Dave, how did tonight's what was the tone of day two?
Well, the tone of day two was very different than the tone of day one. First of all, the boo birds were all gone. I've been here since 4 o'clock, and I don't think I heard a single boo in the entire convention hall. So clearly, it's not for lack of Bernie people. There were shouts of Bernie at times, but there was none of the disrespect, none of the disrespect to speakers that you saw yesterday. But for me, Justin, I have to tell you, the highlight of the day was during the call of the states, when all the states were saying, who they're voting for. There was one moment when I believe it was Arizona. And the way it worked is that, you had different people announcing the Bernie votes versus the Hillary votes. Mm-hmm. And they had a 102-year-old woman who got up and announced the votes of Hillary for president. And she was incredibly moved by it. And frankly, it brought me to tears. It was the moment of the night when all of a sudden there's a recognition of, oh my God, this is really, truly historic. No party in American history had nominated a woman for president before. And this is history in the making. So, Bill Clinton was amazing, but that moment for me captured the magnitude of the evening.
Well, I mean, that was a big part of Michelle Obama's speech last night about sort of cracking through the glass ceiling. Do you feel that the Democrats are starting to embrace the idea that this is history, that this could be the first female to be president of the United States?
I do, and I think that's a unifying theme, and I think it has historic ramifications, and obviously it has political ramifications, given the gender gap between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. But I just think that frankly, Hillary has not pushed this narrative hard. She's hit it at times, but it's something that just is, and you can't ignore. Donald Trump accuses her of playing the woman card. Well, she can't help the fact she is a woman, mm-hmm. and this is the first time. So it was very exciting, but I also found it was really interesting. And forgive the noise in the background.
No, you're all good.
It was really interesting the role they decided that Bill Clinton should play tonight, because a lot of people were really hoping that he'd throw the red meat out into the crowd and really go after Trump, really put some context around Trump, but he played a far more valuable role, and it's one I've been wondering who was going to play it, and that is the humanizer and biographer in chief. Now, everybody's known Hillary Clinton for the last 25 years, but she's been around so long, people kind of forget who she actually is and what her history is and what her background is. So if you think about the debits and the credits of how people view her,
they don't know any of that history. And Bill Clinton took it upon himself to really humanize her and talk all about the challenges that she's had in her life, and the way that she has tried to, you know, make lives better for other people. And I just think he did it in a way that nobody else could do.
Well, I mean, I didn't hear the speech because we're on the air here, but I mean, that has been the role of the first lady speech at conventions in the past. We saw Melania Trump. There were hopes that she was going to do that, humanizing Donald Trump. But we've seen that in the past. We saw Michelle's great speech back in 2008. So that's kind of the role. And it's interesting. Obviously, we forget that is Bill Clinton's role in this election cycle.
And that's an excellent point, and the humanizer was critical, but the biographer was also critical, and nobody was going to listen to somebody else saying, oh, Hillary Clinton was great because she helped found the children's Marion Wright Edelman's group for children, and that she did this with children, and that she did this with disabled, and really Bill delivered that. He's so compelling. He's so understated and compelling all at the same time. And the crowd was just like rapt attention.
So let's talk. I mean, obviously, that's the highlights, and we'll hear more about that speech. From your vantage point in the stadium, what were the lowlights today? I mean, was there stuff that was planned as part of day two that didn't go that well?
No. sorry, but this is not the Republican convention of 2016. This is a well orchestrated event that's designed to prosecute a number of key messages. You had a lot of time spent on 9/11, and not just on Hillary's response to 9/11, but on people who suffered through 9/11 and what they went through, and frankly how Hillary helped in very quiet ways. You had the mothers of victims of gun violence, and that was incredibly powerful. I haven't heard of anything that didn't go off like clockwork today.
That's interesting.
This is like a well-oiled machine.
Well, I mean, you could say the same. I mean, yesterday there was hopes that it would be a well-oiled machine too, and even though Sarah Silverman pulled out improv and was able to get a line, her sort of scripted stuff with Al Franken or even Elizabeth Warren's speech, you know, the media all kind of agreed that it wasn't what they thought it was going to be. You know, moving forward, as they get back on script, the boo birds are gone. Bernie Sanders was able to help Hillary make history tonight by delivering the final vote. I mean, what's next? I mean, tomorrow's a big day for them. The president gets on stage. Is he going to be there in the room, or are they going to do a video chat with him?
You mean Barack Obama?
Yeah.
He'll be here. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Compared to, you know, the Duck Dynasty and Antonio Sabato Jr., superstars and the Trump kids, we have an embarrassment of riches in the Democratic Party, and you have so many truly compelling speakers. Barack Obama is going to be here. Joe Biden always delivers a stem winder. I would expect nothing less out of him. And then, of course, you've got your nominee and your vice presidential nominee. And I had the privilege of meeting and talking to Tim Kaine tonight. He's such a nice guy. I mean, how many people have been nominated for vice president of the United States walk up and says, "Hi, I'm Tim." I'm really looking forward to
what do we expect from his speech tomorrow? I mean, we've talked at Touche about the idea of the vice presidential candidate almost being the one that plays attack dog. Is Tim Kaine have it in him to do that? Is that going to be something tomorrow that we're going to see where he kind of goes after Donald Trump so Hillary can deliver her message without attacks?
Well, there will be some of that, but frankly, if Tim Kaine does tomorrow what he did when he was introduced last Saturday, it will be a grand slam home run. First of all, the expectations, as we talked about on Touche on Monday, the expectations were low, and he blew them all out of the water. And if he's able to do that again on tomorrow, which I have no reason to believe he won't be, I think you're going to wind up with an awful lot of doubters who are in the hall and may have wanted Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders or some other candidate. An awful lot of doubters are going to walk away like, frankly, I did on Saturday,
and go, oh my God, this guy is fantastic. And he's exactly the antidote. He is the anti-Trump because, you know, as Trump is all ego, this guy is, the Yiddish expression is Hamish. He's just so down to earth.
Okay, so I
expect that's going to be the highlight of tomorrow night, notwithstanding the other folks who are present.
So you're there now in Philadelphia. What happens at 11:18? I mean, does everyone get out? I mean, Alicia Keys was on stage. Does everybody just pile out back to the hotels and here come the extravagant parties like the one we heard of Rahm Emanuel throwing for this week?
Yes. I mean, what happens now? I'm locked in a bathroom to try to drown out some of the external noise here, so we can chat. But what's probably happening outside this door is everybody is fleeing to the exits to hop on the buses to have the ride back into downtown Philadelphia or wherever their hotels are, and then it's off to the parties. And I mean, there are so many parties, so many events that have been thrown by various people. I've been here just today, and within an hour of arrival, I've been invited to three what all sound like awesome parties, all of which are at the exact same time. So we'll see what this night will bring.
All right.
It goes late, my friend. It goes late.
Well, we'll check in with you tomorrow night and see if you're still standing. Dave Lundy, the better half of the group Touche on Monday nights here on The Download in Philadelphia for the Democratic National Convention. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Justin. Good night.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right. What a night. Democratic National Convention, day two. Another man who's standing by in Philadelphia is Ro Khan of the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantes. He's been there all night covering for ABC News as well. Ro, welcome to the download. So tell me a little bit about what the tone was tonight.
Well, the tone has really shifted here, Justin, because Bernie Sanders is a distant memory now. After he, it was very magnanimous, and it was a parliamentary trick of the light, if you will, to quote Ann Compton from ABC News. This was in his decision to come down and actually cast not just the final ballot of delegate to put her over the top or to end this convention, to end the roll call, but also to say, hey, you know, she should be the next president of the United States. So at that point, many of his followers did not actually attend today. They holed up in a tent across the street and took it hostage for a short period of time.
No.
with tape on their mouths. They just did a sit-in. Very 1960s. Big flashback moment, and I mean that in every sense of the word. And so they had, Bernie sort of didn't get discussed a whole lot tonight. Alicia Keys, no less a political sage than Alicia Keys, Justin, made her own impassioned plea tonight from the stage to say, hey, we can't let political divisions divide us. We need to put up everything behind us and move forward here. And there was rousing applause. And Bill Clinton, you know. Listen, yeah. I mean, this is, you know, I'll bet you Donald Trump, who, by the way, tweeted right before Bill Clinton went on the air, came onto the stage, that no matter what he does, everybody's going to say he did great. So don't believe anything you hear, okay? But the reality is that he knew that Bill Clinton was going to do very well tonight, and he knew that, and I think that Donald Trump has a little bit of a sense in his own self that he wishes he was as good on a political stage as Bill Clinton is.
Yeah.
Right? Because if he had that skill on top of it, the ability to read real like Bill Clinton does, even when we know he's not telling the truth at times, when he reads really, really real, that's something that Donald Trump can't
do. Yeah, and the emotion that he exhibits, too. Obviously, yesterday was the progressive arm of the party's day. We saw Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. Tonight, Bill Clinton, who really takes the role of the First Lady speech. What was tonight's role for the Democrats? I mean, are they distancing themselves from the progressive wing by moving forward here?
I think what they're trying to do, at least what they're saying publicly, is they're trying to wrap their arms around, you know, those who are willing to come along with them. And we talked to Chuy Garcia earlier today, and it was very interesting because, you know, Chuy Garcia has been in politics for a long time. And he's known Bernie Sanders for decades now, right? I mean, it was 10 years ago that he wrapped his arms around this whole idea of this revolution that culminated in this year's Democratic primary. But what he said is that the problem that they're seeing within the Bernie Sanders camp is that the young kids are the ones who are really disappointed here because they're not used to this is their first time out. They're not used to losing. They thought they were going to win. Very millennial, by the way. I just might want to point
that out. Well, I mean, think about it. I mean, for when I was young, it was Bill Clinton's, Bill Clinton's primary when my first election, then Barack Obama in 2008. They got their candidate to win. They got to go all the way to November. If you're a young kid today, your candidate loses in the primary, you can understand why they're just not familiar with the concept of just going along with something.
Well, maybe because they also all got a trophy at some point, too, but that's a separate issue.
Well, I mean, so tonight, I mean, big night. We talked with Dave London. He talked about how this really got the convention back on track tonight. There were the speeches were on time. They were on point. They were
roughly
on message. There weren't a lot of surprises as almost like last night. So moving forward, is the Democratic National Convention, is it on point? I mean, is it starting to rev up its engine to what we're going to see in the next 2 days?
In the same way that the Republicans did in Cleveland, and we watched that transformation from day one being very clunky, day two being a little bit better, day three kind of coming together. And then, like all of this is like the Super Bowl, when the candidate themselves speak, it can be kind of disappointing because it can be, not just counterclimactic, right? And so this is the sort of night that sets up very well for tomorrow night. Barack Obama is going to speak. There's going to be some other luminaries on the stage, and then it sets up and of course the vice presidential night tomorrow night with Tim Kaine, who can be dynamic from the stage. He's also like Bill Clinton in the sense that he tells a narrative story like he's talking to you as opposed to speechifying at you. And then Hillary Clinton, who's the exact opposite. Even if Hillary Clinton is trying to be conversational with you, she's still at a very high tone with you, and she kind of upglides sometimes at the wrong times. The problem is, as qualified as she may well be based on her experience as a first lady and a senator and secretary of state and everything else that you can imagine, the reality is she doesn't have great stage technique as a politician, and that's something that continues to, I think, hurt her.
I think at some point or another, I mean, she'll be compared to us on the other side of the aisle, and that probably makes her better in terms of the fact that she's done this for so many years, where maybe Donald Trump hasn't. As we move forward, the one thing I saw last night with Michelle Obama's speech, and she talked about cracking the glass ceiling. Tonight, the news really going with this historic moment that this is the first woman to be nominated for presidential candidate. Do you see the Democratic Party running with that angle, running with the idea of making history and Hillary Clinton embracing that?
I do, but I also think that it's not a good strategy because she's so well known. I think that Hillary Clinton, it's not as though this is somebody who's coming sort of out of the blue like Barack Obama did in 2008 to people, and he's going to be the first African American, and he's in this good-looking young seeming guy who's just he's glib, he's funny, he's cool, he's hip, he plays basketball, right? He's like he represented this youthful kind of thing. It was he was Black Kennedy, if you will. Hillary Clinton is really, really well known. And I think that's a bigger problem. She's also 70 years old. She doesn't necessarily represent a brand new set of ideas. I think if Elizabeth Banks were running for president, she'd win hands down. She was out here all night tonight, and I think America might go for her pretty good. You know what I'm saying?
I might vote for her.
That'd be
she's
all right.
Funny.
So I know that's part of the strategy here. I'm not sure it's going to be as effective as they want it to be. And again, I got to just remind you that as great as Bill Clinton is, and he's the great seducer too, right? I mean, that's politics is seduction, and he couldn't be better at it. And he did it tonight, and he did it about his wife, and it made everybody, I think, in this room feel better about her. But Donald Trump is going to get on Twitter, if he hasn't already. I haven't looked yet. I'm afraid to look. He's going to do his interview with Sean Hannity, undoubtedly. He's going to you know, by midnight tonight, the narrative will have been changed, and the shine will be off of this Bill Clinton speech tonight. And by tomorrow morning, they'll be dealing with something, you know, totally different.
Yeah. Ro, is Philadelphia treating you well?
You know, I got to tell you something. You know me, Justin. I, as you know about the show, the afternoon show on WGN, we like to go out and party a lot, a lot.
You said it.
We do. We take the people. You know, as the four of us, and then the six of us, or the producers, or the eight of us, or the 12 of us, or whatever it happens to be. You know, when we're out there, we like to have a good time. And here at this convention, they're making me work. And I don't
like it.
I don't like work. So we're going to an ABC party after this, because what has happened now that this is all done, we have to go back to – we're going to the ABC encampment. And apparently there was a raging party that Jeff and I missed by being across the street from it last night.
Oh,
so we're going to throw ourselves into that tonight.
Yeah,
and by the time we get there, they'll move on to somewhere else. So that is our greatest fear.
That's what you're going to have to work with. Ro Khan, of course, you can hear him with the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantes every afternoon. He'll be in Philadelphia tomorrow and Thursday. Ro, thanks for checking in tonight. Thanks for your insights, and we'll talk tomorrow.
Thanks, Justin.
All right. It's the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. With you till 11 o'clock when Patty Vasquez takes over, 312-981-7200. I'm sure Patty's going to talk a lot about what you thought of the convention tonight. But you know what, Pete? As conventions go, especially the DNC day two, I mean, pretty smooth sailing. You know, a lot of what the media wants to talk about has to do with hiccups and trips and stumbles. But the Democrats get things together and behind the strength of former President Bill Clinton. And they deliver a night that is on message, on point, and otherwise pretty boring. I guess that's good convention, right?
Yeah.
Tomorrow night, President Obama, Vice President Joe Biden, and the new Vice President nominee, Tim Kaine. I mean, it is. It's like Lollapalooza. They just get a Lollapalooza of Democratic politics.
The names are incredible. Maybe Bill Clinton could speak to the Cubs. Fire them up a little bit.
The Cubs drop another one. Game two today, the Crosstown Cup. How does it work? Does it go two at the Cell and then two at Wrigley? Is that the idea? So they go to Wrigley Field tomorrow. But the sweep of the Chicago Cubs by the Chicago White Sox at the U.S. Cellular Field. Sam Panjanovich was there for WGN Radio Sports. He joins us now. What a week for Chicago baseball. The Chicago White Sox doing what we knew they would do. They would just trip up the first-place Chicago Cubs. Right, Sam?
Well, you mentioned trips and stumbles at the Democratic National Convention. There were some trips and stumbles certainly this week in Chicago baseball. I've actually felt more like a gossip reporter the last 2 days than a sports reporter. There's been a lot going on. But on the field, I guess we could start there. The scissor gate on Saturday has only allowed the White Sox to win four games in a row, all in those 1983 uniforms, which they can't take to Wrigley, by the way. They can't do that, so they have to find a new mojo.
Is that what it's all about? Are they doing mojo? Is that the thing where they keep playing or keep wearing the same jersey?
Well, Robin Ventura very glibly said before the game when asked about, is this a winning streak thing? Will you keep wearing these uniforms until you lose? And Robin is a very matter-of-fact person. He said, quote, it was in my locker, so I wore it, which obviously is a little subdued shot at Chris Sale, who famously took shots at his manager yesterday in an interview with MLB.com. So there's a lot going on there on the South Side, but they've won four games in a row, and now at the 50-50 mark, record-wise, 100 games in, they have 50 wins and 50 losses, but they've got that Crosstown Cup, baby.
All right, so let me ask you, we'll stay on the White Sox before we turn to the Cubs, but obviously, I mean, a tremendously awkward weekend for the Chicago White Sox with Chris Sale cutting up the jerseys. Is there any chance that the Chicago White Sox management has had it up to here with Chris Sale and they're going to look to trade him before the deadline, try to get his best deal possible for the ace?
I think there's a 90% chance he's still with the White Sox on August 1st, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't think they trade him. they couldn't get anything that would bowl them over because, you know, the biggest package would have to be five guys that are top-of-the-line prospects, maybe one guy that's a major league-ready player. The only team that can really put that together is the Red Sox, maybe the Dodgers, and those teams aren't going to give up that much because they're in playoff race. You don't want to sacrifice that much. You know, even though Chris Sale has one of the best contracts in the game, he's under contract until 2020. He gets better every season. He was an all-star starter this year, and he's controllable, Justin. I mean, there's no reason to push him out the door. I think they could have handled his temper tantrums a little bit earlier on. You know, he had that temper tantrum in March where he went on a tirade against Kenny Williams and dropped F-bombs. They didn't really do anything. They kind of just let that slide. So they created this environment where he could act like a child from time to time. And I think he's a good guy. He just, you know, he's got a really short fuse, and that kind of bubbled over all the emotion of the losing. He's lost pretty much every season he's been here. He heard the trade talks and the uniform thing. You know, that was just, you know, the tip of the iceberg. So to answer your question, he's still here, and I think he's still going to be here through August 1st. I don't think they really make any moves, to be honest, because they might think they're back in it now.
Do they think that? I mean, after here comes the White Sox. They did the same thing last year where they were able to – they ended up keeping Jeff Samardzija because they thought they had a chance to go run the table, and quickly, right after the trade deadline, they tanked. Are the GMs, Rick Hahn, Kenny Williams, do they feel the same way? You feel like they might be thinking, hey, we're putting something together here?
Well, today, VP Kenny Williams said, to be specific, we don't know if we're buyers or sellers yet. We don't know. We don't know what we are, which, you know, the Sox fan base, I know, is kind of rolling their eyes over because this is like the same old song and dance. The team probably isn't good enough to win a championship, but they don't want to bottom out and rebuild and regut. You know, they want to just kind of stay status quo. And right now, I honestly think that if they can win one of these two games against the Cubs, you know, you're 51-51 after 102, they're probably going to just roll the dice and see what happens because they're not really in a hurry to move anybody. I don't think they're going to also go all in and try and acquire a big bat or a big arm or anything. They're just probably going to go through the motions, see where they are on August 1st, and stand pat. I don't think they're going to lose more than, you know, one guy off this roster heading into the trade deadline. Maybe you lose one guy. Maybe they trade David Robertson. But I don't know. I think they're going to keep sailing Quintana. There's no reason to trade two guys that are valuable and that are very, very solid at the top of the rotation.
Sam Panionovich, we'd make a transition to the north side just as the series does. The Chicago Cubs stealing headlines. No one really cares about the Crosstown Cup because they acquired sensation Aroldis Chapman from the New York Yankees, giving up a lot of players for that deal. But Aroldis Chapman, known as the best closer in baseball, but with off-the-field baggage.
Certainly. I mean, this was a guy that served a 30-game suspension. You know, there was a domestic violence dispute in Davie, Florida with his girl, you know, his girlfriend. They are still together, but, you know, he did serve the time. He wasn't found guilty of anything because there were some different stories and things like that stemmed out, and police couldn't exactly figure out what happened. But he served the time in baseball terms. You know, 30 days he was suspended. The Cubs claimed they did their due diligence. An interesting curveball, though, today, because yesterday it was Theo Epstein talking about a conversation between himself and Tom Ricketts, the chairman of the Cubs, and Chapman, that they all sort of talked about what was expected of Aroldis Chapman coming into the team and what they expected of him as a teammate and a community-friendly voice and everything. So they asked Chapman about that today, and there was this translation goof. I don't think he got the question the right way, but he essentially said that he was asleep when they called, and he didn't remember what they said, what they talked about.
Not good.
So now Cubs PR sent out an email that they claimed a clerical error with the translation process because Chapman doesn't really speak English all that well. It was just a mess, though. And, you know, the first impression, whether there was a translating error or not, was not good. He kind of seemed, you know, a little evasive. He didn't answer questions. It was just strange because, you know, they hinged on this phone call that he knew what was expected of him and that they were going to hold him accountable and they wanted to make sure they could trust him. And then he just kind of sloughed it off today. They tried to put the Band-Aid back on it after, but I still don't know what to make of it. I really don't.
It's so strange because, you know, that was one thing that was brought up by the press was just, you know, is this guy going to be a good character guy? Is he going to say all the right things? On the first day, the first time he talks, he already contradicts management and they're having to come up with excuses. It's not a good start. But then again, like I kind of joked at the top, throw strikes. You know, this is baseball. And at a certain point, you know, fans are fans and they're not going to care about what this guy did off the field.
Well, not just strikes, 105-mile-an-hour strike.
Yeah, right.
This is the fastest pitcher on record, radar gun-wise. He is the fastest pitcher in the history of Major League Baseball. And this is a guy that's going to give other teams fits, whether it's the eighth inning, whether it's the ninth inning. They might even use him. Joe Maddon said, I'm not going to go Raleigh Fingers on him yet. Remember, Fingers would come in like the seventh inning and pitch, you know, the rest of the way. That's a guy that could realistically do that in October if he has to. And it was actually interesting. One of the reporters asked Joe Maddon straight up, if he's not a good guy, does it still even matter if he's closing out Game 7 and bringing home the Cubs World Series? And Maddon was kind of like, oh, boy. You know, that's a pretty you know, interesting question to ask. And he pointed to Ty Cobb, how he was a bad guy, you know, a lot of racist claims. You know, the White Sox were gambling on baseball in the 1919 series. He said that his job here is to get to know Chapman, to keep him on board, to try and, you know, massage the issue and get him to buy into the team culture. And that's what they're going to do. But at the end of the day, if he helps you win a World Series, that's why he's here, because he throws really hard.
Yeah.
He's one of the best relievers in the game in the last 5 years. And you would rather have him in your cupboard, Justin, than have to face him.
Yeah, absolutely. I do see some fans, you know, sensitivity to the idea of somebody who has domestic violence in their past, in such recent past.
And you
just hope that the Cubs did due diligence and this wasn't sort of, we're going to do this just to win because, you know, we're at that stage where we got to win. We got to win now.
Right. And I understand that. And I am never anybody to tell somebody what to think. I feel for anybody who's ever been touched by domestic violence. I think it's a sickening issue to have to talk about in the Major League clubhouse, but it happened. And, you know, you have to do your diligence on it. The Cubs claim they've done it. They're going to give them the benefit of the doubt, and we'll see what happens.
All right, so last question. I mean, the Chicago Cubs, are they done? I mean, is this the kind of thing where, you know, they kind of made their trade a couple weeks before the deadline? Do they need some more help, or is this pretty much the team we're going to see going into the playoffs?
You know, they're 59-40. They're in first place in the Central by 6.5 games. The lead was larger, and now panic starts to set in, and people try and micromanage the holes that they have. This is still a first-place team. They're probably going to go to the postseason. They would like to add another bat, but it's expensive. You know, you can't just pluck somebody out of nowhere for nothing. You've got to give up a lot more players in your farm, and I don't know if they want to do that. They like the veteran bats they added in the offseason. They're going to view Hayward as an acquisition. They're going to view the Zobrist acquisition in the offseason. Those are going to be the guys that they're going to lean on, and they just traded for two pitchers in that bullpen, so I don't think there's any more blockbusters in the future. This is probably the team that they're going to roll with going forward.
All right, Sam Panionovich reporting on the Crosstown Cup. It goes back to Wrigley tomorrow, the idea, so they don't get a day off to rest. They go right back to Wrigley Field tomorrow where we may see Aroldis Chapman. But the way the White Sox are playing, maybe they won't. The White Sox win tonight. They got a 2-0 lead on the Cubs in this four-game series. Sam Panionovich, WGN Radio. Thanks for joining us, bud.
I'm going to go party with the cop. I'll text you a picture.
So download here on WGN Radio, Justin Kaufman. All right, so wrapping up tonight. Tomorrow on the program, another night, we're going to bring you, very excited, Jessica Disu's going to be here, FM Supreme. Jessica is an activist in Chicago. She has a big peace march coming up in the weekend time frame. But she was on Fox News, did the roundtable, or not the roundtable, but the town forum. And she was a woman, the African-American woman, who said, I think we should abolish the police. I don't know if you saw that right after the Dallas shootings. And that's FM Supreme, Jessica Disu, who's been on our program a couple times. You know, and that obviously got a lot of attention and went viral. But we're going to talk to Jessica about her movement and have her talk about that experience being on Fox News. Also, coming up tomorrow, Mike Fouché. And, you know, we got to check in with Adam Hoge, too, this week. Adam Hoge from WGN Radio Sports. I'm excited about this, man, because this means that Chicago Bears training camp begins this week, Thursday. How exciting is that? That's worth it, man. I was watching NFL Live today on ESPN, and the Packers have already started. Like there was like a, let's go to Packers camp, Aaron Rodgers with his little red jersey on.
There's
Jordy
a difference.
Nelson's back, you know, like that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah,
like,
Jordy Nelson's back.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Ugh. There's a lot. I know a lot about nothing from the first day of training camp in the NFL. I watched the NFL Live today for like a half hour in the morning. And I was like, this, I don't know. Okay. I know nothing. This is not going to help me. And this is not going to help me with my fantasy team.
It'll take you a couple of those episodes and you'll be right back on track.
I'll just watch Hard Knocks.
Yeah, that's all you need.
That's all you need. Every time I watch Hard Knocks on HBO, I'm always like, this team's going to the playoffs. This team's got it together. And then they're always terrible. Last year was the Houston Texans.
Mm-hmm.
They may have ended up making the playoffs or getting close to, but you were like, wow, this team is ready to go. I love what they're doing. Then they started off like 1-7. I'm like, yeah. Well, there you go. A lot to watch for Bears camp. I'm excited. I mean, I want to see what happens. You know, there's been a lot about the Bears defense taking that next step. That's always a great conversation. We haven't had that conversation in Chicago in about 5 years. So that's great with Danny Trevathan taking over at middle linebacker. A couple others. The rookie, was it Floyd?
Mm-hmm.
Although they said don't expect a lot out of him, the kid out of Georgia.
What about Kevin White?
Right. And Kevin White on the other side of the ball, Alshon Jeffrey, finally got the receivers healthy until like week two of the training camp. Someone goes down. And I'm looking forward to tomorrow night when they show all the guys showing up in their Hummer and taking their video game systems out.
Their
garbage bags.
Bob, finally Jay Cutler has the tools in the tool chest to get done what needed to get done.
I'm really excited about this year. I think this is really a new playbook, new offensive coordinator. We'll see how that is. Every year it's the same thing. He's got a new offensive coordinator. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
It's a great scheme.
You know, it's a little, there's a couple wrinkles we're learning. Oh, jeez. We're going to see how Kevin's leg's going to respond. Oh, jeez.
That should be the hashtag, you know, how the Cubs have let's go.
Oh,
that's
geez.
A look for the commercials. Oh, jeez.
Oh, jeez.
It's like a scene out of Fargo. Yeah. Oh, jeez. Oh, jeez.
The Bears got a punt again. Yeah. Oh, jeez.
You're a good guy, Jay. Slinging that pigskin all over the field. Eh, you're a good guy.
That's going to do it for tonight. Patty Vasquez up next.